Okay, this is the 1976 to 2006 greatest hits, not a full lecture, just the things that could be on the AP test. Carter is elected in 76. Probably the reason he defeats Ford is these two reasons. The most important reason is that Ford pardoned Nixon. And a lot of people thought Nixon should have had to face justice rather than be pardoned, so that came back to haunt him. Second possibility, on a TV debate, Ford flubbed up by claiming there was no Soviet domination of Poland. So that could be it. During the Carter years, there is the Panama Canal Treaty, in which they negotiate to return the use, the control, the administration of the canal to Panama by 1979. Because it was so many protests going on down in Central and South America about Yankee imperialism. And another explanation, and I'm glad you brought this up, is oil tankers were too big to get through the canal.
Oh.
They were having to go around South America anyway. So
I
there
just
was
saw they're trying to expand.
Yeah, the belief was the canal may, because of its size, be outdated for the needs. There's not as much defense needs to get military ships through there because we had two ocean forces, et cetera. So therefore, the need of the canal is not as great. But the need to get on better footing with South American public opinion was strong. Now, here's something important that could come up. By the late 90s, when we start approaching the point where we have to turn that canal over, who is the president of Panama?
Noriega.
Manuel Noriega. Is his name on here?
It's not.
It was 1999 we were supposed to get it back.
Mm-hmm. And Manuel Noriega had shown himself to become quite obnoxious and standing up to American military and tourists that are embarrassing Americans. A lot of people thought this is a wild, crazy Hugo Chavez kind of guy, not leftist, but just kind of independent-spirited. Do we want that canal to be in the hands of somebody that's not pro-American? You know, we still want to use it without problems. And so what happened to Manuel Noriega?
We took him down.
Yeah, he was arrested during the Bush, the elder years, under what's called Operation Just Cause. Is that right?
And then they go down there and they found like a voodoo doll of the Bush.
Yeah.
Is it like just like apostrophe cause?
Or is
no, it just cause?
That's pretty good.
That's what I thought you meant.
He was arrested for drug sales. But here's the kind of irony of this. Do you remember, I've been building this for this point. When they built the National Security Act in 1947, which created the National Security Council. Mm-hmm. Remember, the vice president was given a role on that council. So Bush, during the Reagan years, was on the same council that knew that Noriega was working as a spy for us but selling drugs. And yet Bush later claims he was shocked to find that Noriega was selling drugs and had him arrested.
The National Security
Council. Also another small tidbit that I shouldn't waste time on. When they surrounded his mansion or hacienda or whatever it was down in Panama, and he refused to surrender. How'd they get him to, after 2 days' time, he came out on his own. What did they do?
Blasted music.
AC/DC.
What? They what?
48 hours of AC/DC music.
Sweet!
He said, that's it. That's cruel and unusual punishment. I can't stand it. They walked and came out and surrendered.
So how's that cruel and unusual punishment
that he's wearing an AC/DC?
Cosmic, actually.
The military does that?
Okay, it's cosmic and mystic.
That's awesome.
Was it because of the music or just because of how loud it was?
Well, he knew he was going to have to surrender eventually, and he said it was not only just the volume, it was that music.
What crazy man came up with the idea that, hey, we'll watch ACDC and he'll come out?
George Bush.
Probably.
Camp David Accords is also, that's the big thing that lasts during the Carter years. One of the things I should say before going to Camp David, well, I'll do it after Camp David. He brokers a peace between Egypt and Israel. This is the first time that a Middle Eastern nation will say, in essence, they're not at war with Israel anymore. In fact, they'll recognize Israel's right to existence. Sadat, the Arab ruler of Egypt, makes this agreement. Begin is the ruler of Israel that agrees to it. Part of the agreement is Egypt will recognize Israel's right to exist and declare that any war is all over. But Israel is supposed to return the Gaza Strip to Arab self-rule, which it finally did, didn't it? The follow-up to this, Sadat and Begin both received Nobel Peace Prizes. Carter does not till later. And that was in 79. What happens in 1981 to Sadat?
Killed.
A member of his own private guard who was an extremist murdered him for agreeing to the Camp David Accord.
Which one was which?
Sadat's Egyptian, Begin is Israeli. In foreign policy, the Carter administration is remembered for pursuing human rights. Human rights in this respect. They said that we are no longer going to back dictators just because they're anti-communist. We expect every nation we deal with, whether it's the communists in Russia or in China, or whether it's right-wing dictators in South Korea, to adhere to international human rights or they're not going to do business with America. That was Carter policy. In 1979, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. Number five. A lot of complicated reasons why. I don't even need to go into it right now. The main thing you need to know is that Carter in 79, here was his response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. First, we cut off grain sales. Russia was buying lots of farm grain from America, and we cut that off. That made a lot of farmers mad. Second, Carter would not allow American athletes to participate in the 1980 Olympics in the Soviet Union.
Coach Gary Matlock
was going to go, and they didn't let him.
Volunteer Olympian.
Really?
Track coach.
So he missed his chance because of that?
Yeah.
Now,
I bet he didn't vote for
Carter. In retribution,
nope.
4 years later, the Olympics were held in Los Angeles, and the Russians, in kind of revenge, boycotted that. We boycotted theirs in 80.
Where was theirs?
Theirs was in Moscow.
Did Russia win a lot of gold medals?
In 80. In 84, we did.
Yeah.
Because outside didn't show up. I mean, the Russians didn't show up. Just teasing.
He went there, he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
But they're not image.
I was actually praising South Africa for being a powerhouse this year. Like the Russians would have been in 84 had they been allowed to come.
One basketball.
You go on.
I don't think that's what he was talking about.
Oh, God.
A lot of people were pissed at Carter for that. It's interesting. People got mad at Carter for boycotting the Olympics. People got mad at Carter for cutting off the grain sales. Why did they get mad at the Russians for invading Afghanistan?
Big Russians.
I think what it was is this, that we were at a point in time where if Republicans are tough against the Soviets, it looks good, but if Democrats, it looks like they're trying to look tough because they're Democrats. That's where that's going.
But he wouldn't let, our grain was one being, not being sold.
Yeah.
And is the Olympics a government thing? Is that, how can that?
That's an international.
How can the president? Isn't there some free will?
I think when it comes to allowing people to immigrate to, or not immigrate, but to visit, like if say, let's give an example. Let's say that the Dominican Republic turns extremely terroristic and dangerous. The president has the authority to put a foreign country on the list that Americans are banned from traveling to.
Oh.
And that's what he did with going to Russia for a little bit.
And how close was that to the the Olympic massacre thing?
72. You're thinking 1972 in Munich was the killing of Israeli athletes.
It looks like a bunch of other countries didn't go here.
There were others that didn't. That didn't participate.
That's the reason they invaded Afghanistan so they could take on one of those.
Probably.
Well, a lot of people thought Russia was invading Afghanistan as an imperialist move to finally get a warm water port coming out of the Middle East, that they would have moved even for. Well, one of the faults in that decision is they forget that Afghanistan is a landlocked country, but that meant you could have gone farther to Pakistan and elsewhere.
They would never have moved to Pakistan.
Yeah, no, but the other, and of course, bin Laden resists and fights against the Soviets in Afghanistan with our help. But and the Taliban, too, we help them, too. But other explanation has it, and I think this one makes a lot of sense, too, is that Russia had within it, or the Soviet Union had within its boundaries, these southern republics, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, that were filled with a growing anti-communist, anti-Russian feeling from Arab nationalism. This Islamic fundamentalism is growing in their own republics. And so the thinking was, if we invade a country beyond our borders that is led by extremist Islamists and kicked their butts around a little while, it sends a message to our own people, we're not going to stand for Islamic nationalism. A lot of people think that the invasion of Afghanistan was a way of trying to tame their own Islamists in their republic.
Good word.
More things in the Carter years. In 1979, American diplomats in Tehran were taken hostage by Iranian students and held hostage with government consent for 444 days. And this is what haunts the Carter presidency the most. Through long and lengthy negotiations, this is number 7, Carter finally negotiates their release, but the government of Iran purposely does not release those hostages until when?
Reagan's prison.
20 minutes into Reagan's inaugural address.
What year?
Because they don't want Carter to get...
They don't want Carter to get the credit that it was released. Even though Carter did it and got them to agree.
Because of Israel?
They were just pissed at Carter.
What year was this?
79 turning into 80. Into 81.
And they were students?
No, they were Iranian students did the capturing, but it was American diplomats in our embassies that were taken hostage. And that was pretty much a rarity. It was very unusual to attack and take over diplomats. Why is that?
Diplomats.
Usually there's always some kind of diplomatic immunity that no matter how bad war is between countries, embassies and diplomats are respected as those who have the right to be returned because you run the risk of your own being endangered. What I didn't go into, and I don't think it's on the AP test, but the reason this mess occurred, Iran was run by a guy named the Shah of Iran, Reza Pahlavi, since the 40s. In the mid-50s, a fundamentalist revolution overthrew the Shah, and our CIA went back in and put the Shah back in power in 54 because he was anti-Russian. And the Iranians were angry at the U.S. ever since 1954. Well, in the late 70s, the Islamic Revolution starts to occur, and a cleric named Ayatollah Khomeini, or Khomeini as it's really pronounced, replaces the Shah of Iran. Shah of Iran's run off. But we give him refuge in America. They wanted him arrested. We give him safe passage to America. So while we're holding the Shah and his monies, that's why they take hostages. And demanded that we return the Shah and all his money.
What do we do to get the hostages freed?
Well, in the meantime, the Shah dies. First, we send him off to Panama. And then he dies in Panama. And we freeze all their financial assets in our banks. Essentially, what happens is we finally agree, if you'll let our people go, we'll give you your money back. Not the Shah's money, but your money. So everybody got back what was theirs. And yet they don't release them until into the 20 minutes of Reagan.
Do we have any Iranian diplomats that we could hold in jail?
We don't do that shit. We're America.
What?
We're the good guys. We don't do that stuff.
What's that thing?
I don't think we had any.
We don't have people. Oh. Is there really a law or is it written down?
We don't torture.
Where? We don't negotiate with terrorists. Is that something written down? Or is that just
that's the Israeli policy. It was the Nixon policy. And that was, in fact, interesting you brought that up because in 69, Libya took American hostages and said if we didn't negotiate within so many days, they'd kill them. And Nixon said, kill them.
Whoa.
And they did, and that was the end of it. That wasn't in the press, and nobody thought about it long after the fact.
Whoa.
And so a lot of people said that Nixon knew how to handle it.
Nixon said, kill them.
Yeah, and they did.
That's
yeah.
The quote.
I'll have to research exactly what he said.
That's the crazy talk.
The essence of it was, do what you will. Do what you will not negotiate with terrorists. I'll find the actual
word. Israeli?
But the point arguing is that Nixon got it over with in a hurry and it didn't haunt or destroy his presidency. So was Carter to be blamed for negotiating with hostages, or should Carter be praised for getting our people back?
Would it also, well, the Iranian students wouldn't have taken those people hostage if it was during Nixon's presidency because they knew.
You would think not. You would think that people who talk tough scare people. Do these people look scared today by Bush? He's a pretty tough talker.
The Iranians were sending us letters like, what, you want to go?
You know, there's always been, you know, while we're on this, this is an important thing in the Reagan years. I can't get a fix on the correct dates here, but increased terrorism in the 80s as well as hostage taking in Lebanon caused Reagan to want to strike back. and there was a belief when a disco blew up in Rome, killing some American soldiers that were in this disco. Reagan believed that, who's the guy that's head of Libya now?
No.
You know this guy. The guy that's head of Libya right now.
Not Gaddafi, right?
Yeah, Muammar Gaddafi.
Muammar still ahead of Libya?
Yeah, he was head of Libya back then.
I know.
Yeah, Muammar Gaddafi orchestrated the terrorist attacks, which included the disco bombing in Rome. Therefore, we're going to fly planes and bomb Libya in retaliation. And France wouldn't let us fly over their airspace. So we had to fly all the way around the Mediterranean to do it, to get over there and drop the bomb. Drop the bombs, killed his wife and daughter, I believe, and didn't kill him. And the argument, and turned out later that the architect of the disco bombings was Syria, not Libya.
Oops.
But the belief was that because Reagan immediately responded and hit hard, that caused Libya to back away from terrorist actions. And there was a reduction in terrorist actions by Libya after this. So was Reagan show of force the right way to go, or did it further aggravate tension?
Did we do anything to Syria?
No, we didn't. Then we'd have to admit we bombed the wrong people.
And also,
there was a ship taken hostage in 1985 during the Reagan years called the Achille Lauro, too. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And a Jewish-American retired passenger in a wheelchair named Klingenhofer was shoved off the ship and killed by the terrorists. I don't know if that's all going to come up, but that's how the 80s still had a lot of time going on with this trouble.
But Israel wanted to talk to terrorists?
That's the Israel. Israel never negotiates.
But isn't that kind of ironic because they were terrorists to the government that was oppressing them?
They were freedom fighters, Sons of Liberty.
Oh. But they wanted to talk, maybe if they negotiated.
America hater over there. So when Carter runs for re-election in 79, here are the two things haunting Carter. The hostage crisis that is not resolved in Iran, and inflation is up to 19%. I remember buying a house in 1979 and paying enormous amounts for the loan because the inflation is so bad. And then right into 83.
19%.
During the Reagan years, we got a lower percentage and we bought another house. 19% inflation rate.
No.
So Carter has everything you don't need to run for re-election. Failing foreign policy, failing domestic policy, runaway inflation and hostages. And so he loses to whom in 1980?
Reagan.
Where had Reagan come from?
California.
As a
governor.
Yeah. And before governor, what had he done
actor,
before?
Actor.
Been actor.
Actor. Pretty much every job.
Here's something.
Wasn't he the actor in Newt Rockne All American?
When one for the Gipper?
Yeah, he's been the Gipper. Right.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Never seen that movie.
How dare you know a film that he?
I love that movie.
Hasn't sanctioned yet.
You want to borrow a condor?
Gangs of New York.
It's someone, Jeremy.
Shut up, Jeremy. Don't get that started.
Well, back to Reagan. This has been on the AP test in the past. Two things about Reagan that they've asked about. One was, what was the, I guess, mood of the country that swept Reagan into office? Reagan started out a New Deal Democrat in the early days. But because of his association with well-to-do friends in Hollywood, he moved over politically into the Goldwater camp and later a pretty good solid Republican. And he had tried to become a candidate as early as 68. He was a governor in the mid-60s, and there was a move to draft Reagan in 68. It didn't happen again in 72, but not with Nixon running for re-election. But in 76, he almost got the nomination. Ford just barely beat him out. It was a real close race in the convention. So therefore, he's ready for 80. And so he's nominated in 80 as kind of supposed to be the new Goldwater. We don't need any more middle Republicans, we need far right Republicans. He was the far right. And what had brought him to prominence was in 1978, this is after he's no longer governor, but he sure is a supporter of this. In 1978-79, California underwent a huge tax revolution called Proposition 13, in which California taxpayers complained, with good reason, and it's even worse today, that their property taxes were totally way beyond control. And so a demand for reduction of property taxes in Proposition 13 succeeded, and Reagan got associated with promoting that campaign, arguing if I'm elected in 80, I'll do the same nationally.
will preside over gigantic tax reductions. And the Reagan theory behind this was that it's called Reaganomics, supply-side economics, based on the Laffer curve. The theory is, according to the Laffer curve, is when you give back tax dollars to taxpayers, especially bigger taxpayers, what will they do with that money?
They'll buy something and get more jobs.
They're right. They stimulate economic growth in the private market. And they will stimulate so much economic growth that they'll create more jobs than existed before. And when there's more people working than before, what happens to tax receipts?
They
go up. So if you want the government to make more tax dollars, give back taxes. Tax cuts, in the long run, create a growing economy that pays more taxes than you originally were getting, so you actually earn more money by tax. You create economic growth for everybody, and you create more of a tax pool for the government. Does that sound, this Reaganomics, supply-side economics, trickle-down economics, does it seem logical?
No, when you cut less for the rich and cut in
actually,
not Reagan, but
if you're working on just the economic theory,
that's if they
the bigger income,
if they reinvest the money.
Yeah, that if they do.
It's if they, it creates jobs.
But do they make the rich reinvest?
There you go. That's the whole thing, is those tax cuts are given everybody do as they will. It's their free choice, and it's
You know how you can make sure the rich invest that money?
Have an invasive, big national, federal, tyrannical, socialist government?
No. No. You make them give it to the government and they'll invest it for them. And we could call it a tax.
We could call it a graduate income tax and make it legal through the 16th Amendment. Well, this is part of the Reagan Revolution. Seriously, this is part of much of the Reagan Revolution. They won't come out and say it out loud, but it was undoing what they thought was runaway New Deal. The New Deal of the 30s and Johnson's Great Society spending programs of social welfare in the 60s. The argument was these programs had grown too large, too wasteful, too bureaucratic, and that liberty and freedom was stifled. In fact, the economy was in stagflation, the argument was, because you can't let private people and private investors do what they used to do. The magic of the market used to solve the problem. There is no magic of the market when there's so much government oppression with taxes. So it's not just a theory of whether or not. I think most Reaganomics supporters maybe believed, but didn't believe it would really work. That wasn't real their real agenda anyway. Their real agenda was not creating more tax receipts. What was their real agenda?
To not pay you.
To cut
money.
Taxes and get government, the size of government, off our backs. In fact, in the inaugural address, Reagan took office, he made a quote, "Government is not the solution to our problems, it is the cause of our problems. It is time to get government off our backs." That's what the Reagan Revolution was about, was reducing the size of federal government, reducing taxes, allowing free market, unregulated markets of the 20s to come back. That's why I admired Coolidge so much.
That because of his two-word phrase.
Well, that's Coolidge.
You remember that one?
Yes, I do, from the book.
It's a little bit
now, whether very debatable as to whether supply-side economics worked. In fact, I'd say it failed because deficits ran up even higher in the 70s or in the 80s during Reagan years. But another explanation is those who defend Reaganomics argue the reason it went up because Reagan had to outspend the Russians of the Cold War to win the Cold War, which he did outspend the Russians in building a lot of military, but that cost government money. And the second argument is Democrats, who still controlled Congress, wouldn't lower social spending. So therefore, Democratic social spending and Reagan's arms buildups ran up deficits greater than what could have happened had Democrats caved and cut these programs.
You know what the government would be like without taxes? PBS. You'd have one good show for every 24 hours of
things. Well, you know, the conservative argument against PBS is if good television viewing, people want it, they'll pay for it in the private market. Why should we be forced through taxes to put on boring classical music?
Let's see.
Classical music is not boring.
I'm just saying. But that's the big part of that's Reaganomics in number 9. That there is this obvious attempt to dismantle big government, and there is clearly an obvious attempt to cater to the wealthy in America in the Reagan years. We just did 9 and 10. And 11. And 12. No, we're doing 12 now.
Sandra Day O'Connor, why is she significant?
First woman.
First woman appointed to the Supreme Court by Reagan.
The first, hey, I took the SAT subject test. I heard someone talking about how they took the government test, and they said something about the first female vice presidential candidate.
Ferrara.
Oh, they got it wrong.
Don't laugh,
Kenny. You know, in 84, Democrats bragged about being the party of inclusion that was the first to run a woman for national office. And Reagan's response was, that's almost as important as being the first to appoint one to the Supreme Court, which happened 2 years earlier.
There's a question here that is, what sex is the statute of liberty?
You know what that thing might allude to that we talk about? Reagan's from California, where women's rights were first
strongly supported. Yeah, good point. Sandra Day O'Connor was a, if I'm correct, Stanford graduate. She was from Arizona. Number 13, real quick. We need to stay real quick on all these. 3 Mile Island occurred in 1979, still during the Carter years. It was a, I can't explain the science of it, but it was a near accident, like a near miss of airplane too.
Never got to the point where the thing was going to boil over, but there was the fear that this nuclear reactor was going to go dangerous. And they got it resolved, but what effect did it have?
It scared the public.
Why were we even flirting with nuclear energy?
Because we had
no oil.
Fits back into that essay about the oil shortages and the fuel crisis and alternative fuel sources. Going nuclear was the idea. Now, after 3 Mile Island, and definitely after the Chernobyl incident in Russia in 1984, people began to fear that maybe nuclear energy was not so safe in the way of the future.
Before 3 Mile Island, though, we got concerned. The China syndrome.
That movie was made at the time this incident happened.
Isn't that crazy?
And they did not know it was going to happen. Casablanca, the movie, was made in, November of 42, and the conference was scheduled for January of 43. Total accident. Item 14, moral majority. This was a religious political movement started in the early 80s by Jerry Falwell. Everybody know Jerry Falwell?
No.
He is a conservative, right-wing Christian preacher, first of the big major televangelists.
Prior to 1980, conservative Christians did not necessarily vote according to that, religious viewpoint. They were split Republican and Democratically. But there's Jerry Falwell, who organized a large number of conservative Christians, called the moral majority to vote for Reagan. And what was the major issue that they went for Reagan with against Carter on?
Abortion.
The abortion issue.
What year is it right now?
We are in about 1981, 82. Although it looks like I'm doing a bunch of... I see what's going on. I introduced Sandra Day O'Connor, and then I think I better get all the 70 stuff said before I get too far in.
So what was Carter's abortion view?
Pro-choice.
And Reagan was what?
Anti-abortion. Pro-life, they call it.
So
I get them confused. I call them anti-choice and pro-death.
They both have to be... positive.
Let's look at the Supreme Court decision in number 15. These are on here. I put them on here because I know they've been on the test before. You know what affirmative action is?
Yes.
A program of trying to...
keep the white man
down.
Shit.
On
day two. Oh, joke.
Joke there.
Okay.
All of you on the internet.
I look across our vast multicultural landscape of people here.
The one person in the session will listen to this lecture.
Affirmative action is a program. It was an effort made by the government and sometimes by private institutions to address historic racism, historic imbalance by trying to give extra opportunity and preferential advancement in hiring to minorities, especially African Americans, as a way of redressing the imbalances of the past. Many have argued that when you give preferential hiring or advancement to someone because of their race or their gender, that it creates an unfair imbalance against other white competitors, and in essence it works as a reverse racism against white people. That was the issue in the 1978 Bakke versus the Board of Regents case.
Oh, I remember this one too.
Yeah, this is important. Alan Bakke had twice tried to get into the California Medical School at Davis, rejected twice, investigated why, and discovered that each year they had 100 applicants they were willing to accept, but 17 of the 100 seats were set aside for minorities. So he, as a white male, had to compete within the first 83 seats against the talent that was there. When he looked at the skills and ability and qualifications of the 17 set-asides, he had higher ability, higher qualifications than all those 17 in both years. So he sued in the federal courts as a victim of just race discrimination and won the case. And the Supreme Court in 1978 said that he should be admitted to the school, and he was denied his rights. But they also said this: that does not mean that race can no longer be a consideration for admission to school. It just can't be the overriding condition. Race can still be a condition. There was a University of Michigan case a couple of years back which addressed this again, and the court still maintained that it can't be the overriding strict quota rule, but it can be a factor.
But if it's,
what does that mean, though?
If it's just a point,
like, if there's two on equal basis, they should take the...
They can.
They can take the...
Well, think of it, this is a way to go at this. Let's say you are you're Harvard. You may want to have a diverse student population as part of the social education for your students, not just race, but maybe geography. So say you have people coming from New England, California, and Arkansas, and Michigan, regardless of race, but talking geography. Should you give all your seats to Californians and New Englanders? Or should you put some set-asides for Southerners? And for, does that help the student body to meet people from other parts of the country? Similarly speaking, does it help to meet somebody who isn't always white? So it can be a factor, like geography, but it can't be the overriding factor.
So if you just do that one first, it won't be the overriding factor?
I don't know the details. I don't think they know the details. What both cases are saying is that affirmative action is not totally thrown out, but there are some adjustments that affirmative action does fundamentally not jive with the 14th Amendment. The birds have it.
Damn,
number 16, here's another thing that could be on the IP test. 1973, Roe versus Wade. Addressing what issue?
Abortion.
It's the court. Prior to 1973, abortion was legal or illegal according to each state law.
Why did they change that?
Why did they?
Yeah.
There is an argument that says that an abortion should be a personal woman's choice of her own use of her own body, her own cells, that the government should not be able to dictate that choice for them. Therefore, it is a right of privacy to be able to choose to have an abortion. And of course, you know the other side that argues that it is, once after conception, that it's the killing of a life. So in the struggle and the legal fight that followed, the court ruled in 73 that within the first trimester, first 3 months of a pregnancy, a state cannot deny a woman a right to an abortion. During the second trimester, the second 3 months, it is, depending on case by case, open to states to restrict some abortions, and in the last trimester they can restrict all abortions. So in the first three, you have a right to an abortion in any of the 50 states. In the second and third, it's according to state by state again. And this new partial birth abortion issue, the ruling that occurred, has something to do with that second trimester, and I don't understand it. South Dakota passed a law a while back saying all abortions at any point in time, even if it involves rape or incest or endangering the mother's life early, is illegal.
What?
South Dakota's law.
After the first 3 months?
Anytime, within any month.
But doesn't this just say...
So it's a total denial of Roe. And the question that's looming over us now is, will there be a case coming from South Dakota where the court will say your law is unconstitutional by Roe, or will they change Roe? Which is why these recent appointments of Roberts and Alito were so significant, because what people didn't want to come out and just say is abortion is the most overriding issue, about the courts coming up and these appointments matter.
So the second 3 months the state can choose to restrict...
In certain procedures. I don't know what those
are. But the third 3 months is...
Supposedly a state can always restrict. Now a state could legally say you can have one all the way up to birth, but they don't.
Okay, the It doesn't say the last 3 months abortion is illegal.
No, it says states have the choice within, total choice within the last 3 months, some choice in the second, no choice in the first three. Number 17, Betty Friedan, author of the book The Feminine Mystique, was the founding president of NOW. What does NOW stand for? National Organization of Women. Advocating women's rights. What kind of rights for women need to be advocated? Isn't there a 14th Amendment?
Abortion. This is Betty.
You said too.
Betty Friedan.
Yes, hiring, preferential hiring policies. Betty Friedan's the author. Yeah.
And she wrote
like,
what?
If they get hired, they can see themselves at the top, and they can't get there because of the glass ceiling.
So should there be extra special laws made to protect women, or aren't they just citizens who should be protected by the 14th Amendment?
That's probably the last one.
Should there have to be laws because people should be...
Were there, should there be laws saying...
Doesn't that give them extra rights?
Yeah, but...
No, wait.
It's Bob Dole's campaign in 1996.
Wait, did the black person have the right to vote before the 15th Amendment?
No, but after the 15th Amendment, should we have passed any other laws protecting them?
Anywho.
Did we?
13th.
Voting Rights Act of 65.
Okay. Well,
isn't that repetition of the 15th Amendment? Shouldn't we repeal the Voting Rights Act?
No.
Okay. So we do need extra laws sometimes?
Not to grant more rights, so to make sure the ones that have already been granted are cleared out.
I feel like you do. Gloria Steinem, also a prominent early women's rights advocate, was publisher of Ms. Magazine. So she comes up. Oh, I don't know about 18. I just don't know if it's high enough yield to go into all that.
Was she the one that talked about the glass ceiling?
Yes. What is the glass ceiling?
Which one?
Where they can be in position but can't get
They don't get to be in the CEO boards of companies, although they can see the avenue where they could be, but for some reason the old buddy system always makes sure that one of the dudes gets appointed instead.
This was, she wrote for Miss Magazine?
She had advanced the argument for that in that magazine.
Is she publishing?
Yeah. She's still alive. Friedan died like last year. I just think there's way too much. Let's put it this way. If you get a question about New Federalism, although Nixon's talked about New Federalism, it's actually more of a Reagan-associated policy. New Federalism is the belief that the federal government has been way too active and intrusive in our affairs. So what we need is, we still need the money. We just don't need the bureaucrats. Give us a block grant of money and we'll let our local state bureaucrats waste it. I mean, spend it the way we should.
So it's just state rights.
To states' rights, yeah. It's a reduction of federal involvement, but still give us federal money. Since the bird shut up, can we have air?
Yeah.
I think he needs for you to open the door.
Thank you.
I'm doing it on mine.
That's succeeding.
There he is, in number 20. I didn't have to put him on the board.
Oh, sorry.
We're done here, right?
Yeah.
I
think we can skip 19. I'm just so afraid that it'll be there, but I'll go to do 19. In 1983, Marines that had been dispatched to Beirut, Lebanon, why? Because there had been a civil war breakout in Lebanon, and Reagan issued those Marines to try to protect Americans going to school there and owning property, were killed in a truck bomb, a terrorist attack. Broke through the gates, exploded, suicidal thing, killed, does it say how many? Quite a few of them. Maybe 100 or more.
Wow.
Killed. The very next day, Reagan invades the island of Grenada in the Bahamas. Now, he said it was planned anyway, but there was no connection between them. But one of the things that did occur was the invasion of Grenada sure did get the press coverage off of Lebanon. Why did Grenada get invaded? Grenada is invaded. It is said because American students at a medical school there were endangered. The reason he said they were in danger is because there was a government overthrow, and there was. The government of Grenada was overthrown by pro-Cuban revolutionaries.
Yeah.
Reagan's bigger fear was these pro-Cuban revolutionaries were going to grant access to the Cubans and the Russians to build an airstrip on the island. So it's part of the Cold War, invasion of Grenada. If you watch the movie Heartbreak Ridge, in which Clint Eastwood is an old Marine sergeant near retirement that trains troops, they have an invasion of Grenada happen at the end of the movie. And what happens is when they're on the island, they try to radio back for an airstrike to protect them. The Navy radio and the Marines radio are not made by the same company or on the same frequencies. They can't communicate, so they have to use a credit card to use a local payphone to call back to Washington to get the airstrike ordered in. That happens in the movie. It happened in real life.
So that $600 radio there?
On the wrong frequency.
There's that military intelligence.
How can radios not change?
Never. I told all I know. Number 21, what is the ERA?
Who had their credit card with them when they attacked some place?
That's EPA.
Yeah.
That's fine.
ERA?
Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah.
We're on number 21. The Equal Rights Amendment floated around in the 70s. It advocated setting up an amendment that said discrimination on the basis of sex is illegal. Part 2, Congress has the right to enact laws to enforce it. Both parties, Democrats and Republicans in the 70s, embraced the ERA. It got out of both houses of Congress. It was going through states getting ratified. In the 1980 election, the Reagan campaign dropped endorsement of the ERA. On the argument that we don't need repetitive laws, we've already got the 14th Amendment. Their women are citizens, they're protected by the 14th Amendment. We don't need a follow-up amendment to repeat what the 14th already said.
Because they're all
citizens.
They're against the government.
So it
wasn't
passed.
Like it against women's rights.
Was it not passed?
It was when it was no longer embraced by the Republican Party. The ratification process in the states dried up and it never got enough votes to become an amendment. You look at what happened in the Reagan years, you look at what happens in the Bush years, and now you can understand this. What I saw last summer on the bumper sticker on the back of a car at Stanford, I never thought I'd miss Nixon.
Was that a recent bumper sticker?
Last summer I saw it.
But did it look old?
God, that is the greatest.
Looked pretty new. Pretty frightening.
Gosh, that kind of old.
84 election, Reagan's victorious, re-elected against whom?
What? The 84?
Uh-huh.
The Carters. Well, that's 88.
Okay. Carter's,
I got this.
Mondale.
Carter's vice president, Walter Mondale.
They're the same person.
There were concerns that Reagan was way too old to run for re-election. He was already the oldest man elected to start with in 1980.
Oldest man alive?
He's the oldest person to win election. And there was concerns that when he ran for 84, he would be in his early 70s, that he'd be too old to run for re-election. He's near 72 right now. To try to turn that to his advantage during the debate, while Reagan was debating with Mondale on TV, they asked Reagan a question. Did he feel as old as he would be if he was re-elected? Well, if you're 69 in 1980, how old will you be in 84? 73? At age 73, do you think you'll be too old to handle the responsibilities of the office? And Reagan's response was, I promised I would not make my opponent's youth and inexperience an issue in this campaign.
Gosh.
Killer. Even Mondale laughed at himself. I mean, what a killer comeback for Reagan.
That is so great.
They were ready with that one. You know, they had to
just wait for them to ask about his age.
That's true for you, but at least he could say them right.
Yeah.
One now, looks now can't even see. Who was Mondale's running mate? The first
vice president.
First female vice presidential candidate. Who was Catholic, Irish, female.
She black.
No, she's white. She
and Jewish.
No, it's an Irish. Sorry, she's Italian. Irish, Italian.
She had been in the Congress for 2 years. She was a first-term congresswoman. Does that qualify people for presidential nomination?
No.
No, they just want to be first.
How about 2 years?
They knew they were going to lose.
Oh, yeah. They
about
knew
about
they
two
were
or four
lose.
Years of Senate service.
What was her name?
Obama should win, right?
What's her name?
Geraldine Ferraro. How about Hoover with no service?
He was Putin. So.
Oh. Number 23. After a long line of heavy Russian leaders like Stalin and Khrushchev and Brezhnev, and after a quick go-through of, Chernenko and Andropov, who in 1985 became
Gorbachev.
How did Gorbachev seemingly differ from previous Russian rulers?
You went on Larry King Live.
He wasn't as anti-American.
Yeah, he was a milder guy who seemed to advocate. And he while visiting Washington, D.C., they were driving around, he jumped out of the car and ran into a crowd of Americans and hugged them and everything. The Secret Service people were going nuts. He was a rock star. He was popular. People liked Gorbachev. Americans did, at least. And Reagan was very, very kind of uncomfortable with him at first, but he got to know him personally. They became good friends. And that's where Reagan and Gorbachev negotiated that INF treaty in 1987. It is true also that during the Gorbachev years, the Soviet Union not only liberalized, but rolled up the Iron Curtain and let people from East and West Germany go across. And Eastern Europeaners visited Western European, and the Cold War came to a close during the Gorbachev years.
How old was Gorbachev compared to Reagan?
Much younger.
But what's INF?
Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. It's the first arms reductions that we agreed to since the 1922 Washington Naval Conference.
And it's a reduction or a limitation?
Reduction. Not just limitation, but reduction. The Iran-Contra affair was a major factor. Yeah. Reagan was very embarrassed by the Iran-Contra affair, and that may be why he moved around to public opinion's wish for negotiations. I don't know. Do you want to hear the Iran-Contra affair?
We're doing
it.
I think it could come up.
I want to hear the affair.
I'll give you what you need to know for the AP test. You understand the background to it already.
No.
Carter... You do in this sense. You're willing to hear it.
Okay.
Carter wrestled with hostages taken in what country? And it lasted all those long days. And the belief was that Reagan was so mean and tough, that's why they immediately, in 20 minutes, let him go after Carter couldn't get him out. But during the Reagan years, more hostages were taken. Not in Iran, but in Lebanon. British and American hostages were taken. And now it was up to Reagan to find a way to get Americans in Lebanon released.
Now, was this...
It's about 82, 83.
This is after Nixon had bombed Lebanon on accident.
No.
What?
Yeah. You mean when he bombed Libya?
Libya.
No, no, I'm sorry. Reagan will bomb Libya in 86. This is early 80s.
Never mind.
That's in his second term when Reagan will do that. So Reagan has to find a way to show he can get hostages freed a lot quicker than Carter did. Well, we've got another world situation going on you need to know about that's going to figure into the story, and that is Central America. In 1979, the government of Nicaragua was overthrown by a radical revolutionary group, pro-leftist, friendly to the Cubans, Sandinistas. And the Sandinistas, led by Daniel Ortega, they didn't proclaim themselves communists. They weren't letting the Russians build air bases, but they were left-leaning. They're kind of like Hugo Chavez right now of Venezuela. What do you mean by that?
Is he left-leaning? Pro-communist?
He's friendly.
Pro-Castro,
pro-leftist, pro-socialist. Not a full-blown Marxist, but far left to center than what our government likes. That's how these Sandinistas were in Nicaragua in 79. The growth of the Sandinistas there, the ever-threatening presence of Castro, that's part of that invasion of Grenada stuff in 81 or 83 that figures into this whole thing. So Reagan is very uncomfortable with the fear that communism is going to grow in Central America. In fact, a lot of us thought a war in Nicaragua was going to be the new Vietnam. Try to stop the growth of communism, we're going to get stuck down in Central America like we were in Vietnam. It didn't never happen, but we feared it would. Probably... The isolationism after Vietnam was so strong, that's why we just didn't get into it. Well, there was a group of revolutionaries, counter-revolutionaries, I should say, called the Contras in Nicaragua. And the Contras were right-wing-backed anti-Sandinistas.
Reagan wanted to see the Contras win. If the Contras can overthrow the Sandinistas, we don't have to worry about Nicaragua going communist. He wants to help back these Contras. Congress does not want us involved in the war, so they pass something called the Boland Amendment, B-O-L-L-A-N-D. The Boland Amendment makes it clearly illegal to give any aid to the Contras. It sounds like the old Neutrality Act of the 1930s.
Does this single the Contras out?
Yes, it focuses primarily right on Nicaragua and the Contras. And Reagan wants to help these Contras. Reagan needs to get these hostages in Lebanon free. Iran is under now the leadership of this radical Islamist, Ayatollah Khomeini. So the Reagan administration, I'll say administration more than Reagan, because he claims he cannot recall any of this. So officials within the Reagan administration cook up a plan. Let's see if we can find some moderates in the Iranian government who, if we do them a favor, they will make Khomeini a little bit more pro-West and go talk to the Lebanese and get our hostages free. What can we do to help the Iranians? We could sell them weapons because they're in war with Saddam Hussein in Iraq. So we'll sell them weapons to fight their war with. In appreciation, they'll go get our hostages free in Lebanon. The money we make from selling the weapons we'll give to the Contras, quietly, of course, because it is illegal.
Hostages are in Lebanon, right?
Yeah. We'll give this money to the Contras, and then we'll win on three fronts. We'll liberalize Iran, make them less fundamentalist. We'll help them in the balance of power against Saddam Hussein in Iraq, who we were also helping. We were giving weapons to Saddam Hussein. We'll get our hostages free, and we'll overthrow the Sandinistas. Nobody will know what we're doing.
And how would helping Iran?
Found out.
How did you say helping Iran would help get the?
If we do them a favor in their war with Iraq, they do us a favor by getting our hostages free from Lebanon.
And
the money we make off selling them the weapons, we can give to the Contras.
But they're going to give it to the Contras because
they give us the money. We'll somehow get the money to the Contras, even though the Boland Amendment says it's illegal. Well, here's where the plan went sour.
Iran didn't want to.
Iran took the weapons and never paid us, and then came out and said, "Guess what? We tricked the great Satan." So there was no money to give to the Contras. So when that part of the scheme became public, and people like Oliver North and John Poindexter, employees of the Reagan administration, went on trial for violating the Boland Amendment, their ultimate argument was, "How could we violate the amendment when they never paid us?"
Common conspiracy.
That's true.
But tried to kill him, the gun jammed.
So you didn't kill him.
Well, so a number of Reagan officials are called before a Democratic-dominated Senate investigating committee in 1986 called the Iran-Contra Affair, wanting to know, to put it in Watergate words, what did the president know and when did he know it? North took immunity, ratted on everybody else. He's now a commentator for Fox News. Poindexter served time.
It's Oliver North.
Oliver North, yeah. When Reagan was requested to make an appearance before the special prosecutor and all of this, Reagan made a deposition on tape. He would not appear in person. And in the tape, he said, "Although in my mind and my memory, it just couldn't be true, evidence seems to point to the other. It looks like we did do these things. But I just can't recall."
He had
Alzheimer's,
right?
He had it at the end of his administration. Do you think he had it early enough then? Or is he truly honest that all these people did this stuff without him knowing, like a Harding? Or could it be that he's lying to his team?
It doesn't matter.
There was a skit on Saturday Night Live. Best skit they ever did, ever at all. It showed Reagan meeting people in the office, like Jimmy Stewart and Girl Scouts, and doing all the kind of head of state type ceremonial functions, speaking slow, bent over stooped like an oaf, kind of losing his memory, not able to talk well. Like the silly fool that's the puppet of somebody else. After all those people go out, he'd call in all his foreign policy experts and he'd start talking about Iran and Lebanon and Nicaragua. And he was clear, he was firm, he knew what he was talking about, he was commanding people around, he was calling people on the phone, speaking in German. Everybody in the room finally falls asleep and says, "Like I always have to do it all by myself," and he keeps calling and making. So which Reagan was real?
He was an actor.
That was the best skit ever.
Holy crap.
Which was the real Reagan.
I have to go.
You heard a lot of good stuff.
Gosh.
That takes us to 25. I think we're almost. But one sheet left. What do you need to know? Let me tell you what number's on the last sheet you got to be concerned with. Don't think 28's on the test. 30 could be on the test.
Do you know what the CNN guy is? That's really on CNN. Do you guys know what his name is? That's really anti.
Wait, what did you say could be on there?
On the last sheet, I don't think we were going to come up to 27 on the sheets on the test. You need to know 27, the Star Wars and Defense Initiative.
The
Strategic Defense Initiative, Star Wars.
I'm just trying to
the sheet we were on.
Maybe I'm not. Well, my sheets are next to
Do you have the sheet we were on?
Right.
Just go down and hit number 27. It could be there.
On CNN.
Could say anti-immigration.
You've lost the
sheet. I don't
know. Yeah. The one we were talking about the Iran-Contra and Reagan.
Oh, okay.
Hit 27.
Okay.
Now move to the next sheet that starts with 29.
Never mind.
Okay.
I talked about 29, but I don't think we'll have to worry about it. 30, I think, is going to be there. Rest of this stuff is so recent, I think it's just not likely to be there. I think most of the rest of the stuff you lived and know. Because you lived after 1991, right?
Mm-hmm.
By 92, 93, you're soaking up all the AP stuff. So.
Mr. Jones?
There's probably more on here, but I think you heard
like
the
Russian ballerinas approach the ballet.
Is this a Keynes thing?
As soon as we can walk, we should start dancing for the ballet. So as soon as we can...
What is he babbling about? Oh, at your age.
He wants us to somehow go back in time and start watching the news when we're kids.
Okay, thank you.
You need to make, like, super history kids.
You know, everyone watches Letterman when they're really young. If the news are like Letterman, everyone will watch.
Think about how many John Stewart raised people there'll be. We need to do 27.
Yeah.
She's got to go, but we need to do 27.
I can't handle all those mannerisms.
One of the things that Reagan proposed when he first took office, and Bush came back and tried here in recent years, didn't get very far, was something called the Star Wars Defense.
Oh, God.
This was on page 1.
What is the Star Wars? Of course, Star Wars the movie was popular in the 70s and 80s, but this is officially known as the Strategic Defense Initiative. What would it entail?
Space.
Having lasers in space. That if
it
the Russians,
was a propaganda program.
Yeah, if the Russians launched missiles against us, our lasers in space would shoot them down before they got to us. Doesn't that sound like a good deal?
Unless they bomb the
lasers.
Well, the argument is, what happens if we use the lasers to attack other people? Then won't there be a laser space race?
Yes.
Aren't we having, instead of a reduction in arms, a runaway new space race?
It wasn't a...
God, the Death Star.
The Reagan argument was, these will only be used for defense purposes, never offense purposes. Which reminds me of a political cartoon where two cavemen are standing and looking at a pile of rocks and another pile of rocks, and one's explaining, this pile of rocks is defense rocks, these are offensive rocks.
That's hilarious.
It was a big cartoon, I thought it was good. But our recent Reagan, I mean our recent Bush, has... wanted to do tax cuts like Reagan and has wanted to do the Star Wars like Reagan.
So
we
shoot down the plane.
Oh, wait, what's the point of war on terror? We know now that Star Wars thing was impossible.
It couldn't get them all. It'd be 10% of the missiles that would still get you. But they claimed that 90% could be shot down if it was accurately built. 10% of any attack would be enough to kill us all. But if we had that power, wouldn't we threaten them enough not to start it?
Wasn't this the same program that said we're going to build a bubble dome over America?
Are you serious?
So your intellectual sneaky dismissal of the program, doesn't that reflect a hate America leftist attitude?
No.
it represents a practical...
No, if
a bubble dome?
Wasn't there a bubble dome in it? Like an invisible bubble dome.
That was another approach that would accompany Star Wars.
Now that's really isolated.
Fortress America, literally. America first stuff. Next page. Here's Noriega being overthrown. We talked about that already.
Was it really not Star Wars, though? Wasn't that really just to get Russia to give up on the
arms? Yeah, that's the argument is this, that if the Russians saw us building into space and they couldn't keep up financially with the space race, that that would force them to negotiate and capitulate and reduce weapons to stop being threatened. And in fact, the big conservative Republican argument is that because Reagan threatened with Star Wars and spent more money on missiles and weapons, causing the Russians to have to go broke to keep up with us, that that's what caused communism to fail, and they negotiated, and the end of the Cold War was brought about by that, which I think makes no sense at all. Because if you feel like your enemy is overbuilding to kill you, do you just say, okay, we give up, just kill us? Wouldn't you use your last dollar to defend yourself?
Yeah. But wouldn't it be that if we didn't this end up resulting in some we'll stop making weapons if you stop making
INF treaty, right. Which it should have been. Yeah, that's what you're looking at, and that's why the world was so shocked, because Reagan, like Nixon, built his political career on being anti-Soviet. In fact, remember the joke that Reagan did on the microphone?
Yeah.
Somewhere early in his first administration, he was toying around, playing around in an auditorium somewhere, and he tapped the microphone, act like he didn't know it was on, and said, I'm happy to announce the Congress has just passed legislation outlawing the Soviet Union. The bombing will begin in 5 minutes. Everybody, the crowd, he jumped back like, was his microphone on? Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, that got all over the world, and the Russians heard it. They weren't impressed.
That's a pretty funny joke.
My dad was in Germany in the army at the point.
I'm just kidding. That's poor taste.
But the thing was, Reagan was known as the tough guy who was only mellowed out by how much he could trust Gorbachev. And what really surprised people is the one who had been the toughest anti-Soviet president ever was the first one since the Washington Naval Conference to agree to a reduction of arms through INF. And a lot of people say the reason he did it was because of all the horrible publicity coming from the Iran-Contra scandal. People were starting to lose trust with him, and he looked at the polls and saw that a majority of Americans wanted this negotiation. So he agreed either because he could trust Gorbachev, it was a good time, or we needed a boost in the polls with the Iran-Contra scandal.
But you don't think the Star Wars thing had anything to do with it?
Congress wouldn't fund it. That was a democratically controlled Congress movement. Now you get a taste of things. Well, you've heard what Nixon tried to do. You've heard what Reagan tried to do. The big question is, everybody thinks Bush is so much more outlandishly different than these two. Bush had a Republican-dominated Congress in the first 6 years. What would have happened during the Nixon-Reagan years if it had been a Republican-dominated Congress for 6 years?
There'd be a lot of...
We'd be in a biodome.
We'd be a different country.
Of the American colonies on
88 election, Reagan can't run for re-election because of the 22nd Amendment.
Who does? It's kind of like I'm pro-Carter. I'm glad that the air conditioning is better after Reagan. Bush the elder.
What number did you say we're on?
I guess we're on 28 if we go back to 28. I should have done it before we moved. Bush the elder becomes the presidential candidate and defeats him.
Dukakis.
And why did Dukakis, the Greek-American governor of Massachusetts, lose?
Because he was a Greek-American.
That's a big reason. He spoke Spanish in his inaugural address.
Oh, God, really?
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
Cut into the middle of his address into Spanish and back into English, too.
That's how Jessica Hawley got elected to her position as student president.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I...
The voting constituency of Northside this year was different than the voting constituency of America in 1988.
I wouldn't guess.
This is another reason. A guy named Lee Atwater, campaign manager for Bush the Elder, put together a campaign to smear Dukakis in these ways. They showed that there was a prison furlough program in Massachusetts that allowed convicted murderers to get out on weekends. One of them, a guy named Willie Horton, African-American individual named Willie Horton, got out on the weekend and raped and killed somebody.
Is this true?
This is true.
And this was convicted murderers can go out on weekends?
That was the way the program was set.
Saturday and Sunday, you're free.
Where?
Now this was in Massachusetts, where Dukakis was governor.
How did that work?
Atwater. Well, but before we get too heavy on Dukakis, there was a furlough program like that in California, and other murders that occurred during the Reagan governorship that we didn't talk about.
I thought Willie Horton had been pardoned, and then that's why no one ever pardons him.
Maybe I got my story wrong, but I thought he was out on a furlough when he did it.
How can you do that?
I'm thinking he's out on a furlough.
Okay.
What Lee Atwater, the campaign manager, the Marcus Hanna of his day, was doing was trying to show that the caucus is not tough on crime. And many people said, wasn't it interesting that the face, the police sketch of the face that was put up there for Willie Horton was so obviously black? So is Dukakis going to let all these black criminals rape and murder your women?
Oh, God.
That's what they said that Lee Atwater's commercial did. And then another thing was they showed what was supposed to have been an environmental cleanup program of Boston Harbor, which had not succeeded, and showed like dead seagulls floating around and crap in the water. That was Dukakis's EPA policy. And there was another commercial where it showed Dukakis riding around in the tank wearing a military uniform trying to look tough, and he looked silly instead.
I've seen that.
Dukakis was 14 points in the polls ahead of Bush in the middle of the summer of 88 when they turned on the lights at Wrigley Field for the first time. George Will, conservative columnist, said no candidate 14 points behind has ever won the presidency. Bush was 14 points behind. Atwater turned on this campaign. Dukakis fell.
Who's Atwater?
The campaign manager for Bush. Another incident which occurred in the TV debate between Dukakis and Bush. One of the questions asked Dukakis, because they knew Dukakis was anti-capital punishment.
And pro letting murderers out on the weekend.
That's the implication, it looks like. And as was the governor of California at the time, Reagan.
But then again, the governor of
Reagan didn't know what he was doing.
Oh. I don't understand.
That's why he's called the Teflon president.
Reagan forgot that he let them.
Anyway, the question that was asked Dukakis was, if somebody raped and killed your wife, Kitty Dukakis, would you then be pro-capital punishment?
How can you ask?
Who asked him that?
The moderator of the debate. No,
sounds like Dr. Warren was.
Yeah.
Well, the reason that was considered a fair question is because the debate over whether or not capital punishment was an appropriate...
But why does it have to be a very personal question?
Because that's the very classic argument you always ask. When someone says, I'm anti-capital punishment, someone always comes back, well, what if it was your kid, or what if your wife that got killed? Would you then be anti-capital? I mean, that's the
what if it was your kid who did the killing?
Yeah, it's a classic thing. Yeah, I don't have that.
They don't have that one.
A little bit.
But the way Dukakis responded really hurt him. What should have been the political response?
What did he say?
I'd cut his nuts off. But of course, the law ought to prevent me from it.
That's what he said?
No, he should have said that.
Oh, no. I just got so confused.
He should have said, I'd tear him from limb to limb, you know, I'd tear off his head and grab down his throat. That's what he should have said, right? And then he should have followed up by saying, however, the laws on the books would not allow me to do that. That's why we have laws on the books to control emotionalism. He should have looked tough. Instead, he said, well, as you know, I've always opposed capital punishment, and while I would be deeply hurt and harmed by such a... It was the emotionless Dukakis. It was the guy who didn't seem to have any concern at all. And that's, they say his response to that question cooked him. Did you not see the Saturday Night Live skit where Lovitz plays Dukakis? And they ask him that question. And John Lovitz, what he says, I'd be shocked. I'd be outraged at such a thought. With no emotion at all. Then it turned out on the Saturday Night skit that the Dukakis character was a space creature that had no human emotions. We need to show this tape.
Not this minute.
You know, when you tell a Saturday Night Live skit, it's a lot better than they usually are on TV.
This one is fabulous. I know. All the skits on it got that. Yeah. Bush Gore debate. Okay. We're going to watch that out.
Yeah, we will watch that. That'll be one of the first things we watch. Is the. But the point is that Lee Atwater had successfully, in the last minutes of the campaign, put together a big smear campaign that Dukakis was not weak on crime and that he was
not strong on defense. He looked silly in a military uniform. There was also another thing. He was a card-carrying member of the American Civil Liberties Union who opposed mandatory pledge of allegiances in school. And so Bush the elder made sure that he went to flag factories and was asked how he felt about the pledge of allegiance while he was at the flag factories.
A flag factory?
American flag.
They have flag.
Do you remember when 9/11 happened and there was a shortage of flags and they printed them in the newspaper? Mm-hmm. And they still printed them like they still print them periodically.
When Atwater died of in the end of the Bush administration's years, Atwater died of cancer. And in his dying comments were, "I'm so sorry of what I did to Dukakis. It wasn't fair."
Well, a little too late now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, here's what's that? Dukakis in a tank, flag factory, Boston Harbor, Willie Horton.
Did Dukakis, like, ever comment on that?
He was a good sport about it. Well, in fact, glad you mentioned that. One of the arguments made was that Dukakis thought that a lot of this low-life mudslinging, the best way to handle this was not respond. So you don't get in the gutter with people, you ignore it, you just stay positive. And they said that that was the major mistake Dukakis made. He should have fought it out case by case, he should have fired back, made criticisms back. By not responding, he looked like he was guilty of the accusations. So that's why when the Swift boat people attacked Kerry responded so quickly because they said, remembering what Dukakis didn't do, he better respond.
Yeah.
Last year, he cut line
not the time. Yeah, but that's the one with Robin Williams.
Yeah, they said something about
he doesn't want
to. Blah has done allegations of yada yada yada, and then he says like yes, I held it in my hand, put it up to my mouth, and inhaled, and all kinds of stuff like that. And then
he goes through everything that he did wrong in his life.
Yeah,
he's like so. I smoked pot when I was 16. I got arrested at the age of 21.
I farted right back there.
Robin Williams. I saw the movie, but I don't remember seeing that part.
And then when he's at the press conference, he says something about, like, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I wanted to
very much, but
yes,
I didn't
remember that part.
Did anyone think that Robin Williams' performance now was kind of stale?
I liked it. I have a way of judging the value of movies that goes like this. If the next day or two afterward I'm still thinking of the movie, it's a powerful movie. If the very next day I forgot I even went and watched it, it wasn't very good. And it stayed with me after I watched it. But it did fade, like cotton candy, it faded quicker than normal.
I'm not saying it's not good, it didn't have a good message. That was made by the guys who did Wag the Dog.
Maybe you're right. Maybe the message was good, but the movie itself didn't live along as I thought it would.
It's very laboring to watch it after the truck ran into the telephone.
It was kind of true.
Like,
we're on the last page of notes for the whole course.
Oh my God.
Sure.
Well, I didn't say we can't review a lot of cool stuff.
Right.
There's a little bit of New Deal in the mornings left.
Or watch yourself.
But 30 is important. Thurgood Marshall, what do we know to be true about him?
He was the first African-American Supreme Court.
Do you remember anything he did before being appointed to the court?
He was
a NAACP lawyer. The Brown case, that's true. When he retired in 1991, Bush the elder had to appoint his successor, which he did through whom? And we've already told the Thomas story, haven't we?
Isn't that kind of weird?
The Anita Hill thing?
Yeah.
Is it...
The what?
Was there any negativity about how...
Black for black?
That's they'll only get one black... I mean, there will only be one black Supreme Court justice ever at once.
Now or then?
Are there two right now?
Are you saying is there criticism today that there's still only one?
Is there criticism that the only person that will ever be on the Supreme Court that's black is if the other black guy retires or dies?
Well, let's see if your question... what you're saying is, if Marshall was appointed in 67 and another one, and he's a replacement, doesn't happen until 91, were there any appointments between 67 and 91? And yes, there were. There were Ford had appointments, Nixon had appointments, Reagan had appointments, they were all white males. So... I think probably, I don't think society was really expecting, I'm sure many liberals and black people were hoping, but I don't think society was really anticipating that there'd be more people put in. Think of it for a second, too. How many black people are there in America percentage-wise?
Probably
12,
11%. 11%. What's 11% of 9?
Less than
not
one.
Even 1. So if you're going by statistics.
So a black person is 3/5 a person?
1/9. Less than 1/9. But if you work in that perspective, how many chicks are there?
Half.
More, isn't it? Don't men kill themselves off more than chicks?
Sure.
So it's like 54% women, right? What's 54% of 9?
It's not demographics. It's
about 5.
Around about 4.
Should it be, though? That's what you're asking. Our appointment.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
You are saying that.
No.
Appointment politics.
I'm saying it. Maybe a black person will never be considered for a seat on the Supreme Court. I'm not saying this isn't my question.
Okay.
They'll never be considered unless the other guy's gone.
But you're saying why didn't people expect or see a second appointment before the replacement was the only second appointment?
Sure. No, how? They're just going to make sure there's one black guy on the court and that's
maybe
it.
Maybe they're trying to go with a good one,
and that is that the criticism that came was, should it be an automatic that if a black person is leaving, do we have to just appoint another black person for quota maintenance? And then the criticism was, did we appoint one that was really a good one? And that was the argument.
Is this titled Black Justice? Or
what?
Now we'll hear from that guy. It seems kind of strange.
I'm not black, so I shouldn't say what I'm going to say.
Especially when it's being reported.
But from what I've seen over the years and what an NPR report showed lately, just how welcomed and celebrated has Clarence Thomas ever been in the black community since his appointment?
That guy's crazy.
He's not. Why is he not?
Because he's crazy.
Because he's putting things on Coke cans.
He's extremely conservative.
That's what it is. Yeah, at the time, that was the major argument, was that he is if African Americans by 90% support Democratic Party politics and liberal politics, he is more conservative than Alito and Scalia.
I think he's high tech lynching.
I am never going. If I
where high tech lynching right now?
What?
Don't you remember he wasn't there for the Anita Hill story?
Oh.
How? That was not anything like that.
The what of what Hill?
Seriously speaking, think about it for a second. You know how loyal the black community can be towards people of color that are in prominent positions. They really care a great deal for supporting them. But you don't see that kind of support for Colin Powell, for Condoleezza Rice, and especially for Clarence Thomas. And why not?
Because they're conservative.
Their policies are very conservative, which the majority of the black community oppose.
Okay, so it's not that black people support other black people, it's they support people that help that have the same concerns as them. Like Bill Clinton wasn't black, and
he had concerns too. Then that's why
it's not a race thing.
Race matters. In fact, an important point is, where's Obama in all this? Is he black enough?
It's not a race thing. It's the sharing commonalities, and it just happens to be that some racial groups have similar circumstances.
Well, you know, we can make this easier. Let's go back to 1928 and ask whether or not Al Smith was Irish enough for the Irish. Or Kennedy was Catholic enough for the Catholics. I mean, at what point do the factors, I think for the black community, it's still a very big factor, much more so than, say, Catholic in 1960. Anyway, Thomas got appointed, got approved, and there was, during the appointment procedure, a surprise when Anita Hill came forward to testify against him on the grounds that he had sexually harassed her.
And was she a black woman?
Yes, black law professor from Oklahoma University.
She
had worked at the EEOC under his leadership.
If that had happened to anyone else, that appointment might not have gone through. But they couldn't turn him back because they would just have to find another black person to fill the seat to keep the.
I see what you're saying. He himself said that the bringing forward of her was, as you put it, just a high tech lynching of an uppity Negro.
But who was lynching?
The Democrat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he wasn't liberal.
Okay, so it was a lynching of a Republican.
Yeah, but purposely attacking a black person.
But who's in the Democrats?
90% of the black voters.
Okay, so.
But you're right. It's race. It's race and ideology at fight.
Ideology. Nice.
Well,
yeah.
While this could be a free response to the question, I think we should move on. Number 31.
Hey, you brought it up.
Watch it be an issue.
race politics from 1967 to 1991. Really, really. Number 31. This is where you guys come into existence here. You're around at this time, aren't you?
Saddam
Hussein attacks Kuwait in August of 1990. George Bush the Elder makes the declaration, this will not stand. Goes to the United Nations, gets the United Nations Security Council approval, and lines up 17 nations to engage in war with Hussein. And when Hussein, after numerous warnings, refuses to leave in January of 1991, we attack with what was first called, when we mass troops up in Saudi Arabia, it's called Desert Shield.
Shield.
And then when the attack comes, it's Desert Storm. In January of 1991. And while Saddam Hussein made threats that America better bring 10,000 body bags for their new Vietnam, they'll be stuck in forever. It's over within a couple of weeks. And he's expelled from Kuwait. What does Bush the Elder not do?
What? Look for weapons? Die when they try to?
Does not pursue him into, doesn't try to take over all of Iraq. He just kicks him out of Kuwait, says mission's accomplished with that, and succeeds. Saying that, and then people for years after that, including Democrats, say he should have finished the job and gone up and got Hussein and taken over Baghdad. I think Bush the Elder was wise not to.
Did he have the authority to follow
Hussein? No, that's true. That was another comment. He said that was not what the UN authorized. It was not what the 17 coalition members agreed to. We only agreed to freeing Kuwait.
So that'd be like going into Iraq after going into Kuwait.
Yeah.
Such a logical
and
so, you see differences between father and son?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the death of Bush was, I don't care.
Although they're both Republicans, so.
There is a difference.
So
didn't Bush Jr. say he doesn't care if the UN improves on that?
Well, Bob Woodward, in his three books that he wrote on the Bush administration, and the last one was Last Stand or Something Stand? No, State of Denial. The third book, State of Denial, when asked whether or not Bush consulted with his father on these policies concerning Iraq, the Bush response was, I consulted a higher father.
The Constitution?
Yeah.
What's
right
up there?
The black lady upstairs.
That's what I was going to try to say. He doesn't mean Walton.
This is his response.
And all that's on line for Osama.
He said that? Was it a televangelist?
No, that was a comment in the interview with Bob Woodward.
Bob Woodward?
What was the question?
Was this the first?
If he had consulted in his recent Iraq policy, since his father had also fought against Saddam Hussein in earlier years, did he coordinate and ask questions and get advice from his father, previous president? He said, I've chosen instead to commune with or talk to a higher father.
How can he,
Which tells us, if we ignore the religious part of that,
yeah,
it tells us that there was not a lot of closeness between he and his father. They differ on policies.
Didn't Senior once say that he was embarrassed, Bush, that he ruined it for the...
Earlier here, about 2 months ago, they didn't know if it meant Jeb or whom, but he was giving a speech and asked me that, and the father got emotional and cried, and they didn't know what that was all about, but the impression was that he was so embarrassed by what the current president had done to ruin the political futures of Jeb. That's the surmisal of journalists. See, the father didn't say that.
That's so
funny. Hold it. Who said that? That's why he was crying. Was that
some left-wing media talking head pundit?
Do you know it's true?
You know you're not allowed to do that.
Interpret?
Right.
Okay, all you historians, remember.
No, I mean,
interpret.
No, reporters.
Tell that to every historian.
Reporters not allowed to make judgments, Colin?
No. They present the facts in the readers.
Maybe it's an editorial.
Prescott
Bush, the grandfather of the current president, who was engaged in helping IBM punch cards go to the Nazi government so they could identify the Jews sent to the camps to which the DuPont chemicals helped do.
Holy crap.
What?
Yeah, maybe let's not talk about Prescott Bush.
Maybe that's unfair. Maybe that's innuendo on our part.
That's a Bush related to who?
As in the father of the guy.
Skip down to 34.
Whoa.
As you know, Clinton and Gore defeat Bush's re-election bid. This could be on the test. Who was in 1992, and again, not as powerful in 96, but in 92 especially, a third-party candidate? Yes, Russ Perot at first was ahead of both in the polls and then crazy things happened and he dropped out of the race.
What crazy things?
This is so weird. He announced on Larry King Live in the spring that he was going to be a candidate. And immediately, he jumped ahead in the polls of the other two candidates. And he stayed ahead in the popular opinion polls all the way till the summer of 92. And for the first time, historians began to wonder if it's possible that a third-party candidate could win the election, win enough popular vote to win electoral votes and win. He
said that?
No, but it was just as smart as what Lennon did. And here's what happened. During the Democratic convention, Perot announces, I'm dropping out of the race. And they say, why? First, the Democrats seem to be getting their act together. Follow-up question, does that mean you're endorsing Bill Clinton and the Democrats? No, it does not. Second, my daughter is getting married this summer, and we know for sure that the Bush administration, who's been angry at me for running, has assigned FBI and CIA agents to harass the participants of my daughter's wedding. So to protect her wedding, I'm dropping out of the race. That guy almost won.
Who's her his daughter?
Did it late August?
I'm gonna go punch her in the face.
In late August, after the wedding, he says, "I'm back in the race." But he wasn't serious anymore. So, but he ran again in '96.
Clinton. Who is this? Was she marrying a convict out on weekend? Murder on weekend fun day or something?
I do not know that. Yeah.
What?
You're like giving a 10-day keynote.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
Well, Clinton wins the 92 election over Bush. And as you know, he wins the 96 election over whom?
What?
Who does Clinton? Dole. And right before the 96 election occurs, something very privately happens. It's revealed throughout the whole second administration, which is?
Monica.
Not only Monica, but all these ladies here. Paula Jones. Monica's the big scandal, yeah. And again, he's chased around by another special prosecutor. We got this started in Watergate and haven't ever since. Kenneth Starr.
First time his name is Kenneth.
This might be on the AP
first
test.
First guy in history named
for all those Irish people named
Kenneth. Anything.
Kenneth Edelman. He was a negotiator for Reagan for arms reduction talks. John Kenneth Galbraith.
What's this Kenneth Starr guy? Who's this Kenneth Starr?
Kenneth Starr was the special prosecutor who investigated the Clinton administration on accusations of corruption concerning the Whitewater case and the Travelgate and the FBI files. They found nothing related at all to Whitewater, but in the middle of the investigation, a lady named Susan Tripp called up Ken Starr and said, I got this friend of mine named Monica Lewinsky who's been telling me over the telephone that she's doing Bill. I got it all on tape for just for you. So Susan Tripp turned over her tape-recorded telephone messages to Ken Starr, say, where Monica talks about doing it with Bill. And Ken Starr asks Monica to appear before the investigation and asks her if she was doing Bill and said, if you lie, you go to jail.
What was she?
To which she
was. Why was she being?
Said, I've got a blue dress that has never been washed.
Oh.
So then, not telling Clinton what's going on, he calls Clinton up for a deposition and wants to know, did you do Monica?
He says no.
He says, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
No.
And after that, the blue dress story comes out.
Was he in oath when he said that?
That's why he was impeached. He was impeached for perjury, testifying under oath a lot.
You can't get impeached for 10 minutes of perjury.
True.
That's the essence of the impeachment. And
what if he had said yes, what?
Hillary would have pillared him.
Would have what?
Pillared him.
Meaning?
But look, right, he's not
going to get
re-elected, and you can't get kicked out of office. Jack, can you? Or if you were going to get kicked out of office,
a lot of presidential historians say this, that according to the technical wording of the Constitution, he didn't have to ever give any testimony, even though people like Ford and Reagan had done so on tape, and he did so also, that if you held out and said, I will refuse to testify, I have executive privilege, you can't make me do this, the only thing they could do is impeach him. And they'd have to find grounds for impeachment. And if he hadn't committed any crimes, they couldn't have impeached him. So somebody said he should have just refused to answer. Why he answered? One reason is he wanted to avoid looking guilty for family and nation.
But the other explanation is, I think he thought he didn't know about the blue dress. He didn't know what they had on. He thought it was just a case of wild rumor accusation. I can lie about this and get away with it.
And then he came back against it.
Yeah.
Well,
who doesn't wash it?
Wild time. Item 40. You know what happened in item 40?
Yes, sir,
after the death of...
Moses? No.
What's Tito's name? Tito? Yeah. After the death of Joseph Broz Tito, Yugoslavia fell apart. And civil war raged throughout Yugoslavia from the early 90s on. Serbia, under the leadership of Slobodan Milosevic, launched a genocidal campaign of killing people in Kosovo.
Who were they killing?
Muslims, I believe.
Muslims?
Yeah,
were they?
Yeah, it was Eastern Orthodox Christians killing Muslim Croatians and Kosovoers. And so, in response to that, because we had not responded to the Rwanda massacres earlier, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright pushed Clinton, and she had a reason to be concerned about genocide in Europe because her family had escaped the Holocaust in Czechoslovakia and was to move to America. She pressed Clinton to do a bombing campaign on Serbia to stop the killing of Kosovo people, and it worked.
No. And then he appeared in the world.
But in the bombings, they accidentally blew up the Chinese embassy and killed Chinese people in the city.
Oops. What?
What's the capital of Serbia? Belgrade. In Belgrade, they these precision missile attacks hit the Chinese embassy and killed a bunch of Chinese diplomats in their efforts to try to discipline Milosevic.
Didn't
he
appear before the World Court? And
he was dragged before the World Court on international human rights violations and died while on trial. Yeah. If you ever see a picture of Milosevic, I tell you who he looks like, a blend of half Newt Gingrich, and here's a person you probably don't know, half Paula Bevel.
The teacher?
You know Paula Bevel, the English teacher? She was here, I guess she's been gone so long, none of you know her anymore.
She left the year before I came.
Okay. She was a spicy story in and of herself. But Paula Bevel and Newt Gingrich mixed together gives you a Milosevic look in the face. Not on the AP test.
What was the Rwandan massacre?
Well, it was a civil war between Hutu and Tutsi tribes, and it was a mass murder that went on, and the UN looked the other way, and the U.S. did not involve themselves.
No, the UN went. They just...
No, the UN...
They had inspectors they pulled out to save them because there was no troops.
Some troops got killed.
And they couldn't shoot back.
No.
And, of course, the obvious argument is because there wasn't oil and they weren't white, the world didn't concern itself with them. So the failure to move there is why Albright said we should move in Kosovo.
Who were white?
2000 election could be on the test.
Mm-hmm. It might not.
But what if you were putting a 2000 election on the test, what would you say? The Florida situation. That it became a questionable recount in Florida, settled finally by the what? The Supreme Court. So that's probably what they're at.
The worst case.
I know there's stuff I've missed, but I think I've tried to hit everything this whole year. Boy, what about 9/11? Would they ask 9/11? Is it far back? They might.
They won't.
What do you need to know? You know what you need to know.
They won't.
We lived through that one.
Yeah.
With
Bin Laden, Al Qaeda, all of that kind of
stuff. Aren't you still in grade school?
They turned it on at all in sixth grade, man.
And I see them turn it on.
No, but I said they didn't tell us.
So we
told us, and then we turned on the news.
They didn't tell us.
And my dad came and picked me up at Boston. He took me out of school early that day.
I would like to stress, do you have these things? I don't have many left. Remember, I made a collection of all the potential essays from the Gilded Age to the present.
All those are the greatest things.
They're useful if you want to look through them.
Okay.
He doesn't. Please forgive all the horrible typing and typos and spelling problems. Now we need to think of what's the most strategic use of our time. I did this last night. I actually did it earlier in the day because I wasn't drinking last night.
That's right, Osama. We in the West, right?
I don't think that was a sensitive comment there. I think you should
apologize to the radicals.
Not the radicals.
I wrote down the summary of all the essays that could come up.
What? Compromises.
I remember that when we did that. But you know, before we do these, let's finish that 1941 to 48 essay we never had. We all have it, right?
What is it? The DBQ?
It's a DBQ that was a substitute question last year. I mean, it's good, knowledgeable material. It could be used again. Since it's a substitute, I'm thinking the majority of people never saw this question. Therefore, it could come back as a free response one this year.
What does it look like?
It says, number one, analyze developments from 1941 to 1949. Okay. You need it?
I don't have it.
Why does it say free response question?
Let's see here if I can give. Here's one for. Somebody's going to have to share it because I don't have one. Then. Can I use this one? You guys share?
No.
Sit together on it? Then would you leave it with him when we go? Because he probably never got it. Unless you got it in class during the day.
No.
Okay. Well, okay, we're back into how do we write essay mode. What are the things that we have to make sure we put in an essay to get points?
A thesis and some facts to support it.
How about answering every part of the prompt, too? And on DBQ, you got to do what?
Use examples from the document.
As well as?
Outside.
What if you just use only your outside knowledge?
It won't be good.
What if you just use the documents?
Okay,
let's analyze this. It's asking you to analyze? What does analyze mean?
Yes.
What does the verb analyze mean?
Comprehend, look at stuff and
make
facts.
Yeah. Well, isn't it make meaning of, interpret? So we're going to look at and try to make meaning of, interpret developments from 41 to 49, 1941 to 1940, that increase suspicion and tension between the U.S. and Soviet Union. So between those years, developments that cause suspicion and tension. Didn't ask you what caused relaxation of tensions, did it?
So it's a weighted question.
So it doesn't look like a two-sided question at the start of it. Maybe there is. And to what degree was suspension and tensions not as big a factor as the question implies, but doesn't seem to ask that. It could do less and more, maybe. And then it says documents and the knowledge of your time. Well, okay, well, let's. First thing I'd suggest you always do is before you look at your documents, brainstorm all the outside knowledge you have at that time period. But we're looking at things that caused trouble between the Soviets and the Americans from 41 onward. As early as 41, are we in the war yet?
When?
Not till when?
December.
December 8th. When's the Soviet Union in the war?
Right before
June 22nd, 1941. Remember Hitler a year after taking Paris turns? And, okay. So in early 41, neither of us are in war. Are we friends?
No.
Are we enemies?
No.
Are we in common or have differences?
Differences.
What are our differences?
Communists.
They're communists, we're capitalists. That kind of problem had existed ever since Russia became communist. It was worse in the 20s. It's a little better in 1941. In fact, it's been a little better since 1933 because of what? Why did we extend recognition to the Soviet Union in 1933?
Because
the enemy of my enemy is our friend. Hitler's come to power. Hitler threatens both the West and the East. So there is common cause between us.
How would you say that?
I'm thinking this way. While we were traditionally very uncomfortable with communist Russia because of their political ideology and the fear that communism would spread, By 1941, the threat of Hitler to both nations probably eased those tensions somewhat.
What was this record? How did we recognize the Soviet? What was that in? What
FDR presidents officially have the authority to extend recognition to foreign governments or refuse it, receiving ambassadors, etc. And he did so for the Soviet Union to increase business during the Depression, but also to kind of send a signal to Germany and to Russia, I guess. But more than that, more than this pre-war conditions of anti-Sovietism, what wartime decisions increase or decrease suspicion of Soviets? What did the Soviets want more than anything out of the West during the war?
What was it? Help?
Help. Help coming where?
On the other front.
France. A second front in France. They're fighting from 41 on. When do we finally open a front in France?
44.
Well, what are we doing for 3 years while they're dying by the millions?
Building them. Waiting.
What Stalin thinks, watching and waiting and let Soviets die. So would that increase tension and suspicions?
Yeah.
So the delay of a second front aggravates Russian attitudes towards us. What's the reason for the delay?
Isolation. Aren't we waiting for them to sign something to say they'll help us?
I think it's just kind of damned hard to invade France.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, that's the whole point. There was an operation buildup called Operation Bolero from 41 to 44, in which that's the building.
What is Operation name?
Bolero? That's a cool name.
It's because it's building up.
Yeah, building on the musical piece that builds up. And in those years from 41 to 44, where we put so many weapons and so many tanks and planes and guns and stuff in England that they thought England would sink under the weight of American armaments. That's how much they thought they needed. And when they did attack in June 6, 44, over a million people attacked. And even then there was concerns whether it would be successful or not. So invading France across the English Channel was no easy task. So there is good reason for waiting. But the Russians felt like, well, you know, we're doing the dying by the millions also. We don't have the choice to wait. FDR wanted to try his best to relax the suspicions. Why is the Casablanca Conference an example of that? What was declared at Casablanca Conference?
We would enter?
No.
Stay in the war as long as Russia was in the war?
No conditions of settlement. We all fight till unconditional surrender to the enemy, which sends the signal to Russia, we're not going to drop out early, we're not going to negotiate separate from you, please, you don't do the either. So that's what that conference meant. That's why FDR wanted that front, even if it meant lots of losses, FDR wanted the front earlier than Churchill because he was afraid if we don't get started, Russia proved it in World War One. They can.
What's the name of that conference?
Casablanca.
And was there a name, Casablanca Conference Treaty? Promise,
agreement,
pledge,
announcement, yeah. So those are war features that go on. And when the war comes to a close, what was discussed at Yalta?
The division
of Germany. What else?
They
entered the war 3 months after the end of the German war.
In the Casablanca conference, wasn't there something about Russia coming
to a...
There's something about them. Isn't there something about them coming to help?
In Japan?
I thought there was something about where they waited till... Never mind.
Stalin never came to the conference. Could that be what you're thinking?
No. But
okay. And the reason he didn't come, he claimed, is because he was too busy fighting war. He didn't have time to talk about things like the weather. But he's too scared of airplanes to fly, too.
Okay. I gotta go again.
But you're gonna come back.
I know, and then I got a phone call from my mom. She's out partying, so I have to go pick up my friend.
Oh, okay. Well, we're just practicing how to do this essay, but you may want to find out from others. They'll write down what I say. You can't read this anyway. So.
It'll be online.
This probably, oh, that might be online. You will get from others what they write down on this.
Okay. I would say I'm coming back, but I'm not leaving.
Sound like a country song. So, what was the part of Yalta which ended up... Do you remember this? What part of Yalta ended up being... Stalin double-crossed FDR?
This is what I'm talking about, that thing.
Oh, this is Yalta, not Casablanca.
Okay, that's why I'm on.
Yeah, Yalta doesn't come until February of 1945, weeks before FDR dies, and he looks very frail at the conference. You remember the Poland issue?
It was Okay.
We gave
them Berlin.
East Berlin. We let them take Berlin in the war.
Right.
And they would occupy East Berlin. Well, the agreement at Yalta that created so much concern is this. Seemingly, Stalin agreed to coalition governments in Poland and other Eastern European countries that were under Soviet troop domination. But is it really? But as it turned out, he never agreed to any. He never allowed any kind of free elections. He left puppet governments that were pro-Soviet in place in every one of those countries. Now you can look at this from a number of perspectives. One is, anybody who's been invaded and lost millions of people twice in a century is not going to leave neutralist governments on your border. You're going to have puppets on your border to protect you. Or, therefore, Stalin had never intended to honor the agreement. No one could really expect him to. Another argument was, FDR was always so naive to think he could trust Uncle Joe, and Churchill's telling him all the time, he's a commie, he's a Russian, you can't trust him, that FDR was fooled and tricked by Stalin, and therefore it was FDR near death in a weak and naive condition that agreed to Yalta, and that allowed and gave permission to the Soviets to occupy all of Eastern Europe. But many people said that Yalta set the stage for the whole Cold War.
Yalta is the
Potsdam's the last conference.
Okay.
And that's after FDR is dead and Truman.
Which one's the one that was the official ending of?
I think you're thinking of the surrender on the Missouri of the Japanese.
There wasn't
one for Germany.
There wasn't like a treaty.
So what we've done so far in our we're just brain scanning, right? I am. Everybody else is politely staying with me. Okay, we're brain scanning. So far, all we've talked about is 1941 to 45. That's half the decade given to us. Do we have some facts that show things that cause suspensions and tensions?
I'm trying to remember what I said earlier.
We
the
had
basic communist-capitalist difference between us before the war.
And our waiting center.
Delay on the second front, the way Yalta and the Polish government issue turned out. So all of that's before the war is over. I think what you can really see is that the Soviets want to be in a good position in the post-war period, and they fear the Western allies are going to be their enemies later. We want to be in a good war position, and we fear the Soviets are going to be our enemies. So there's a lot of suspicion between us before the war is over.
What was America's stand compared to Russia's about what to do with Germany, like in after World War One, we wanted to just.
We were kind of. That's a good question. At Yalta and further, even Tehran for that matter, at the Tehran Conference of 43, Yalta 45, and Potsdam in 45, we pretty well agreed to divide Germany into four zones or three zones. The French get one out of the other two.
Okay.
Berlin the same way. There was an argument about whether or not to deindustrialize the country. That never made it. So the division of Germany, the holding of Nuremberg trials, all of that's pretty much everybody agrees on that.
And these things, it was in those, we divided it, but were those new territories for those countries, or was that just that they were going to watch over?
Good question. Are they just administrators for a while, or are they colonies? That answer comes in the second half of our question. We're after 1945. We're going 1945 to 49. What events occurred that caused tension? We've done this already earlier today. First, they'll say the Truman Doctrine,
mm-hmm.
The rebellions in Greece and Turkey, the Greece-Turkish Aid Bill, the Marshall Plan, the Berlin Blockade, the Berlin Airlift. Those are the tensions from 1947 and 48 that take place. Do you remember this in 49? We allow all the western part of Germany that's in the three zones to be combined into one country that we no longer occupy, called the Federated Republic of Germany, while East Germany becomes the Democratic Republic. So Germany is divided into two permanent nation states, West and East, capitalist and communist. Would that lead to tensions?
Probably.
We had an atomic bomb by 45, and we used that as our main line of defense in 46 and 47 and 48. Would that be causing tensions? Soviets got a bomb in 1949. Now we both have A bombs. Does that increase tension? Do we have enough evidence for an essay?
Definitely.
I think we do too, but what about this? How about domestic? Let's not even talk about foreign policy. From 47 to 49, don't we run around fearing ourselves that we've got communists in our own government?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Loyalty oaths, oh, Alger Hiss.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
the guy who just randomly accusing people of communism.
McCarthy starts in 50, so that's 1 year out of our period. But you can always use the old, obviously the events of 41 through 49 would preclude the result of McCarthyism in the 50s. You can throw that as a final comment. But the loyalty oaths, the HUAC committee, the Taft-Hartley Act, which made union members have to sign up for the communists, I mean, all of that stuff we do at home, doesn't that make us more suspicious of Russia?
Mm-hmm.
How about Kennan? Does he contribute to this? George F. Kennan, what does he say?
He should roll back.
That's Dulles.
We should contain.
Yes, that the Russians are a threat. We need a containment policy. Does China become communist in 1949? Does that increase our tensions and suspicion? Yeah. Any more evidence? Hopefully, when we dig through the documents, they're all different facts, so we don't lose some of our own what we called independent knowledge. What's document one say? Damn! I didn't know Truman would say that. This is obviously before. Well, June in 41, it's when Russia was invaded. So it just triggered a memory for me I just forgot about. What did Germany and Russia do in August of 39?
Claimed a lot, part Poland to each other.
They said they were going to negotiate a non-aggression pact, but they really made plans to divide up Poland. So in June of 41, was it possible to see Russia as much an enemy as Germany? I didn't think about that until I saw this document.
Wait,
if Russia was supposedly threatened by the Germans, why are they negotiating a non-aggression pact in August of 39?
With who?
Germany.
Poland.
Well, that's the real reason they want to carve up Poland, but isn't a non-aggression pact that Germany steps away from an alliance?
Yeah.
So that's early. That's before we needed the Russians. They're already commies. Now it looks like until they're invaded by Russia, they were not buddies. But what's Truman's? If you heard a Russian say that about us, you know, we'd help Japan defeat America. How would we feel?
I can't trust that guy.
Yeah. So this kind of talk to a newspaper reporter, if it got back to the Russians, definitely would create suspicions and tensions in the beginning of the war. It's kind of hard to believe Truman say that. Who's Cornell Hull? Of course, also you might want to drop this in. Maybe not important at the time, but who is Truman going to be?
Well,
yeah. A future vice president and president, remarks made back in 41 can come back to haunt him. So in the Cold War period, if the Russians got a copy of this article, how are they going to think about negotiating with the new president? He could use it that way. What does the second document address? Let's read it together. Quietly. Okay, what's being said there?
That if people believe that Russia did most of the fighting against Germany, then they'll see Russia as bringers of the peace.
So some of our outside knowledge just got stolen from us, didn't it? What part?
The Second Front
stuff. We can still wax and wane on other Second Front truths, but the concept of Second Front now is partially a document thing. But as you point out, the document goes further. And should we give the Russians some kind of extra choice because they did the majority of the dying?
Yes. Mm.
No, because you can't trust the Russians?
Just
creating suspicion and tension.
Well, we have tension, so we obviously want to control the bargaining.
So you could keep in mind, you do not have to weave every one of these documents into meaning. You're going to write your essay the way you want to write it, using what you can from the documents. So you don't have to be compelled to make a document fit into something you're not thinking of. How about document C?
It sounds like.
Look at the date and look at the issue. Excellent opportunity for outside knowledge. What conference was held in February of 45 discussing the occupation of governments of Poland?
Yalta.
It's Yalta. They don't say it's Yalta. You get to.
So therefore, as you talk in your essay about the problems that Yalta brought up, you can say, as was evidenced in document C, when Stalin blah, blah, blah.
So...
Oh, those demons, look what they've done. They're taking away our containment. Remember document D. However, they never use the word containment, do they? They mean it. That's what they're talking about. So while Kennan didn't make his containment article until like 48 or 49, so this is early on. Kennan's already formulating his beliefs of the problems of the Soviet Union. And you can say, as he would later enunciate in the North American Foreign Affairs Journal, which he wrote under a pseudonym X, I think, offering the containment policy.
That's a lot of outside noise.
Yeah. Who's Molotov and E?
The guy that made the Molotov cocktail?
As well as?
The guy that was for Russia's, like, Secretary of State for Russia?
Yeah, a foreign policy minister.
Yeah. It says it.
He negotiated with Ribbentrop the non-aggression pact in August of 39. So dropping that in, I mean, if you can drop background knowledge about people in the documents, that brings you points. If our Secretary of State makes a policy comment, is that of weight?
Yeah. Yeah. They just talk about you all.
It doesn't?
In document B.
Impossible.
Oh, damn. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? But it doesn't use it in the connection we did earlier.
It's the word Kissel, right?
Keep in mind, as you look through each document, you're not only looking for factual stuff you can use, you're trying to come back to our original question, which is what? What caused tensions and suspicions. So anything you find in these documents that can be interpreted as something that caused tensions or suspicions, you've got suspicions. If it lessens, you can say that too. I didn't read G, what's the cartoon saying? Implying.
Communism will spread very easily. If we don't do anything, it'll spread a lot faster.
What you may not recognize is the dude spinning the globe is Molotov.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Oh. Yeah, I just remember if you've seen pictures of Molotov, that's
him. There's a picture of Marshall picture of Marshall.
Now, what is Molotov?
That's true.
He was in document E, but what is this guy? I don't know.
He's foreign minister.
Yeah. I mean,
foreign minister is like a secretary of state for Russia. So your foreign minister and your leader of the country are sitting here planning how to take over all of Western Europe. Who's next to be liberated from freedom, comrade?
That's talking about like the puppet leaders of the countries.
Yeah. And he's staring at the picture of Marshall. What's Marshall of any importance? Marshall Plan. So this is their response to the Marshall Plan? So while we're trying to build up Western Europe to be non-communist, they're planning to take over Western Europe?
When did Churchill make the Iron Curtain?
45. It fits. Excellent. Is there a Churchill thing in here?
No.
But you know what? That's perfect. I forgot all about it. The Churchill's Iron Curtain speech definitely creates suspicions and tensions on the Russians. He's calling for an alliance with America. Sorry for forgetting that.
Can you tell us about this Churchill speech?
Churchill, as you know, voted out of office during the Potsdam Conference. He wants to be a prominent British politician again. He's a man without a job in 45. He comes to America and is invited to be a speaker at a graduation.
Is that little college or something?
It's not a little one. It's pretty important. Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri is a pretty prominent college.
Okay.
So he's invited.
Too.
Yeah, very. He's partied up there once. But he's invited to come be a graduation speaker, and during the speech he makes the comment, from Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an Iron Curtain has descended across Europe. And he goes on to talk about how important it is that England and America stand firm in protecting the Western world from the new threat, the Soviets. What he was really trying to do was keep England important, so it wasn't second place to America, and make himself important, so if he gets reelected, which he will in 1950, he can be somebody significant.
That's what everyone's thesis needs, a metaphor like the Iron Curtain or something like that.
You're right. Good point.
Well, true.
It was remembered. The Iron Curtain speech was considered one of the factors that sent a signal to the Soviets that England and America are ganging up on us. When the wall came down in Berlin in 1989, big chunks of the wall were sent to Fulton, Missouri, to Westminster College. Last cartoon. It's the doc. It's the one we did to start with, right? Changing attitudes of how from 1945 to 48 the essence of it was became more suspicious. So we've looked through the documents, we freelanced our knowledge, we're sick and tired and bored, so we decided not to write the essay, even the choice essays, we just gave up, right?
Yes.
No. We took this attitude. Everybody else across America is sick and tired and bored. This is a cakewalk for me. If I write anything, it's better than the people that went to sleep and left. So let's write our essay. With all the knowledge we have, what truth can we say that ties all that knowledge together in our documents and our outside knowledge?
All this precursed the Cold War.
So events prior to the Cold War had already set the stage for tensions further inflamed by domestic and foreign policy events.
These are the events that set the stage for the Cold War.
But setting the stage for the Cold War would be up to 45. Isn't 46 to 49 the real Cold War?
Okay.
So we need a compound sentence here in our thesis.
With a semicolon.
So, World War II strategic moves and decisions, as well as post-war, as well as the post-war era, saw an ever-increasing growth of tension and suspicion between the Soviet Union and the United States. We need something else on the end of it, but that's
and formed the Iron Curtain. That's Jeremy said something.
Jeremy said that. Sure.
Yeah. But you'll come up with something. And you've got all the facts written down, right? Now, what are you going to do if you get an essay in which you can at best think of seven outside, even less, maybe three outside facts, and all the documents look like nothing to you, and you get maybe guess out of one or two documents.
Write a really good thesis.
That fits what you know. Get what you can get. Don't flip out. Don't freak and give up. Get what you can get. It may not be your best question, but you're gonna shine well on multiple choice
and
proofs.
See if there's any facts that you remember.
Yeah. Sometimes go back and look at the question again. It may well be looking at the question will trigger a thought. Looking at the documents will trigger a thought. But don't freak, even if you're only able to do only one third of the question that's asked for. Do it as best you can.
Oh, and think that everyone else in America is having the same exact problems.
Exactly. If you're left lost, they are too. They've given up. Besides, they're thinking this test was free anyway. Our parents didn't have to pay for it. Why even bother? That's what everybody else is thinking. You got the advantage over. Hopefully, you're not thinking that.
I'm thinking about that commission when I was not free.
Ready for this?
Can you read it?
This is the third rewrite of what I couldn't read. This is the third rewrite of what I couldn't read. Well, I tried to think of every topic and time period that could come up. You want to do 20th century first, then go back to the beginning, or do the beginning?
Can we take a bathroom break first?
If we do, will we ever come back?
No.
Yeah, if we just go to that bathroom.
That bathroom.
So no food or beverage, you just...
Right. No, I drink 40 ounces of liquid.
Okay.
I have prostate, so I have to go to the bathroom.
Okay, then we'll start this back when we come back.
Why?
Well, I so respect you guys staying so long. I know it's got to be agony. I hope it's helping.
It is. I know most of the old stuff. I've had to study the new stuff.
Well, we better start the new stuff then. Why don't we... Let's review things from Reconstruction on. In the review of stuff, let's review from Reconstruction up to now rather than colonial up to Civil War. Okay. Is that your ball they're playing with now, please? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, it's fine. It's a cheap ball.
Mr. Jones, did ever be asked DBQ before on the history test?
They do it every year, yeah. It's common for history. They don't do it in government. I think if you can just successfully use, they like you to use as many of the documents as possible. There's usually 8. If you can use as many as 4, you've probably used enough to get enough credit. If you can use more, that's of course great. And even if you don't think you're, if what you're using looks pretty much pretty thin and pretty weak, it is amazing. The instruction that says use documents and your knowledge of the period, they're real strict about it. You've got to use both to get points. If you use only one or the other, you'll lose some points. So it's funny, if you used only one document, it wouldn't be a strong use, but it would be enough to kick into the higher category of points.
Is it easy to make a 3?
I think it is.
Like, if you really suck at essays and stuff, like, if you have the information down with the whole essay stuff,
if you have good knowledge and it seems to back up an introductory statement that's good, it won't suck. It'll be pretty good. And from what I understand from the graders, they told me last summer that they've become a lot laxer in how good your thesis has to be. That if you rewrite the question into a statement form with fancier nouns and fancier verbs, it's not as good as they would wish. But if the rest of the essay is fabulous, you could still get up to 8 or 9.
That's a 2 on the test.
A 2 on the whole test, not just the essay, but on the whole test, will give you high school AP credit, but it won't give you any college credit. But the margin between a 2 and 3 is so close, why not fight for the 3 and get the college credit?
What's the grade on the test?
I understand Matt knows better than I do because he's seen everything, but it's something like if you get in the neighborhood of about 60%, you're making a 5.
What?
Isn't that crazy? That's a D in real life. Is that what it said in the book?
Yeah, Ms. Howell was showing us something in about the AP biology test. It's like 60-something.
You make a 60% on the test. You
on the whole, if you in terms of the balance between your multiple choice and your essays, if you score about 60 out of 100, you're going to get a total 5. So which means you could still get a 3, probably down in the neighborhood of the 40 to 50%. Chemistry, I think, if you get 30%, you get a 5. That's what Andrew Austin was saying.
So if you make like a 1, you get like 10% and 20% or something.
Probably. Do you have those practice books? Yeah, they tell in the beginning of the book how it's graded. Can you guys explain what percent ranks you at 5, 4, 3, 2? Have you looked at that
it's
yet?
Like, it's like, what is it, 60% is a 5?
They do it by percentages?
Well, in essence, once you balance out the
board. Yeah, like on chemistry, it's only 30% is a 5.
Oh, you know, that's wrong, actually.
Well, that's if you, like, nail
if you get
perfect on the
if you get a 50 of the multiple choice out of 75, and you do about the same on the essays,
I was one of the
you like 6s and 7s on your essays, then you can get a 5.
I need to take my test right here, and I would get everything.
Well,
right.
If you get 2/3 of the points available on the free response section.
Gosh, you don't realize. I took the subject test.
Hello?
You should have taken the chemistry subject test.
I should have. It's so easy. They don't even have they don't even let you use the calculator on it. I bet it has like nothing on it.
You know they don't let you use the calculator on the multiple choice?
Yeah.
What? What?
You don't need to.
What?
It's all this memorized stuff that none of us know. You might.
What?
Unless you... have you read...
What?
Shut up, Jimmy.
You're so...
I never knew this. Why did
you... didn't know that?
Oh, yeah. The last part of the free response goes over our labs, and it doesn't ask you to do math. It asks you to tell why you're doing certain math things. We're
going to
get screwed on that so bad.
But that's only like 10% of the grade. It's not a big deal.
It's a big enough part, because I'm going to get 10% of it wrong. Just
that's
as soon as I put my name on it, I will have got it wrong.
I'm going to get it all right.
Kenny, what did you think? What did you think when you went into your AP politics test? Did you think you were going to do well?
This is what I thought. This is what I thought.
You're an idiot.
Oh, shit. That's what I thought.
What did you think today when you took your subject test?
This sucks.
But, like, when you walked into the room.
Why are there only 8 people in the room? Then there was only 6 for the second test, and then there was only me for the third test. I did the test all by myself.
Hey, was Miss Durham the minister?
Yes.
Isn't she nice?
Yes.
I brought her donuts one time.
She's very nice.
She thought that she wanted to cheat.
What?
If you look through your multiple choice practice questions, whether it's the take-home 2 test or whether it's the books, you should be able to answer every multiple choice now.
Mr. Jones, I'm pretty sure that if I took the test at this podium with the microphone on, like this, with people in the room, I'd get a 5.
What gives you that impression?
I don't know. I feel the divine presence of
Kenny,
all knowing.
Kenny, are you Catholic?
Sure. Yes.
What would the Pope think if you went and put his hat on, whatever that thing's called? I think that's what Mr. Jones is experiencing right now.
I was actually, I thought that when I walked in, but then after he gave me this wild story about making a 5 by being up there. Okay.
He's so...
I've seen Jeremy do it too. He sat in that chair.
Supposedly, the only thing you probably couldn't answer on a multiple choice now is what?
1930s.
The last half of the New Deal, because we've already got, second period. Is anybody
that
second period? Second period still starting the New Deal, but everybody else should be up to re-election.
Politically retarded in that room.
But second period?
Yes.
Certain members of the
class.
Yeah,
man, he's
in second period.
The
tape is
money.
This tape's not
right. Oh. Yes, there are clinically retarded people in their party.
It's not that. It's just the most amazing example of don't give a shit I've ever seen. It's just amazing. And there is no fear. I mean, like I say, you know, you're going to make a 1, you're going to fail. Okay, all right, that's fine. Okay, we'll be back in a minute. Talk.
Are they going to take the test, man?
They are. There's a... I can't say that my... I'm in a different class.
Good judgment. Got the better of it. There's the Reagan skit I'm telling you about. I got to tell you this.
When I say class, I mean just graduate.
Oh, I see. Well, let's see if you are as comfortable with it. Let's just read the question and not the answers and see if you could guess what the answer should be.
It's multiple choice.
I'll get back to the essays in a minute here. Supreme Court decisions concerning Native Americans in 1831 and 1832.
Dawes is 87. Are there choices?
But you knew something.
Are there choices?
There are, but what should the choice answer be?
We're ignored by...
Well, didn't the court... We're ignored.
Something about them not being citizens.
Nation within a nation status. Should not be forcefully migrated, but they are ignored, like you say, and Jackson sent them out anyway, right?
Choices
are this.
What's the question? Just the
Supreme Court decisions concerning Native Americans in 1831-32. And then there come...
There's a verb later.
And then you fill in the blank.
The verbs are all in the answers. Reinforce the rights of states to remove Native Americans from disputed lands.
That's a... But a maybe.
The court decision did that?
What did it say?
No. Reinforce the rights of states to remove Native Americans.
That's not true.
No. Well, I would not mark it out yet.
Okay. Denied them the right to sue in federal court, but affirmed their rights to land it was traditionally theirs?
No.
That's kind of a Dred Scott mix-in thing. I'm not liking that. C. Voided previous treaties between Native Americans and the United States on the grounds that the treaties were unfair?
No.
Not to my knowledge. Speaking of treaties being broken for 100 years, who wrote the book A Century of Dishonor?
Oh!
Helen Hunt Jackson? Okay, number D. Granted tribes official status as foreign nations?
Yeah.
It sounds good, but bad. But it sounds good.
Foreign nations?
In essence, isn't it nation within a nation what happened? Let's see what we got left. Ruled that the federal government had a unilateral right to relocate Native Americans' lands west of the Mississippi?
Yeah, that's a big no stamp on it.
So doesn't D look like the only choice?
And what was A?
A, okay, let's see that. I'm with you. I'm not real comfortable with D yet. Reinforce the rights of states to remove Native Americans from disputed lands. I don't think so.
What's the Trail of Tears then?
That's a federal thing. The states didn't do it. Jackson did.
Oh, it says it
reinforced states' rights to do it.
So the nation, but in the first half of the question, it's
Supreme Court decisions.
So they can say that.
I think the court said these Indians have the right to be their nations within a nation. They have.
I know D's correct.
I think it is too, but let's see what the answer is.
That's good.
Of course, the cool part is it gives you an explanation even if you miss it. So.
That's the best part.
Wow, we're going to miss this one.
A.
This is going to show that one of two things. I don't teach clearly enough. Sometimes they ask such details.
Here, let's not do it again. Don't tell us the answer. Let's listen to the question again.
Supreme Court decisions, I think it's a case we just don't know enough here. Supreme Court decisions concerning Native Americans in 1831 and 1832.
I really, wait. It can't have anything to do with the trail things, because someone would have had, and a Native American would have had to go to the Supreme Court, and they're not recognized as citizens. So they
How
can't.
How did you know that?
Because they're not
That's
citizens.
The answer.
But what's the question then?
He's got it.
Then what's the question? What are the choices?
They're claiming answer B, denied them the right to sue in federal court, but affirmed their rights to land that was traditionally theirs.
But they only...
I never liked the foreign nations part, but they were nations within...
But what lands did they affirm? They only gave them... They said that Oklahoma...
It has to be the year.
Here's their total explanation.
Okay.
B is correct. In the 1831 case, Cherokee Nation versus Georgia, Marshall ruled that the American Indian tribes were neither foreign nations nor states, and as such... had no standing in federal court. In short, he ruled they had no right to sue. He argued further, however, that the tribes had a right to the land and could not be forced to give them up, including the federal government couldn't remove them. The 32 Worcester versus Georgia case, which I thought was in 1833, reaffirmed that position. When the state of Georgia tried to relocate Cherokees, Marshall ruled that only the federal government cannot, not states, has the authority over Native Americans within the boundaries of the United States. Jackson didn't like Marshall's rulings and simply ignored them, pursuing an aggressive policy aimed at pushing tribes farther west. The result was the Trail of Tears, the involuntary westward migration of the Cherokees. Over one quarter died, and exhaustion during 3 or 4 months forced the march.
That's awesome. It's like Tyndall in
Well, you would have missed it, and you'd have missed it because of me.
What was the choice? What was the correct?
I gotta go.
Which letter was the right? So
you want to get to say it. Those of you that leave, I know it's only going to be two of you leaving, or three. But those who do, be sure to get what we talk about on this.
Someone, who's writing that down?
They will.
I'm going to try.
They will.
And Matt, we're going to do.
Sounds good. Tell her I said happy birthday.
Here's a way to keep her from running off. Number 75. Which of the following was intended result of the Dawes Severalty Act?
Don't look on the board.
What was the intended effect? First of all, what was the Dawes Act or Dawes Severalty Act of 1887?
It dealt with Indians, whereas the Dawes Plan dealt with Germans.
Okay, now we know what you dealt with. Do you know the details of what it did with and or to Indians?
No. But I think I can when I read the choices.
All right, let's hear the choices. A, railroad companies would be persuaded to stop unfair pricing through a number of government incentives.
No.
B, recently arrived European immigrants would be enticed into settling in the less populated West.
Maybe, but I don't think so.
Legislators would be less likely to accept bribes because of the severity of the penalty.
No.
Southern state legislatures would be motivated to strike racist laws from their books in return for greater federal aid.
I don't know.
So you're thinking E has to be it no matter what?
No. I think there's a V possibility.
Native Americans would be coaxed off reservations by land grants and would thus assimilate into Western culture.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That is clearly it. Because they were given 160 acres of land. But the purpose was to make them stop thinking of themselves as tribal Indians and more like land-holding wasps.
But it turned out that 160 acres wasn't enough.
Right. And it ended up becoming welfare awards of the state because they couldn't become successful farmers. But it did both. It destroyed their culture as tribal identities, but it also did not make them successful farmers.
And they also got the crummiest lands. Right. And if they did have
so
a good
you listened to the lecture.
No, I was reading about that. And oh, I listened to that.
Because you're using words I use, so...
Okay, then I'll probably listen. Yeah. Was that in the Gilded Age?
That's in the Gilded Age missing, not at Westark Park.
Okay, that's... Yeah, that's in
there. Where it's real soft and boring and hard to...
And your wife comes in and then I'll call you back.
And I tried so hard to say, honey, I'm taping.
Hey!
Are we running?
We're doing it again.
I think we are.
So
there we are. Let's continue. Well... You want more of a multiple choice? You want to go to these? I didn't mean to make steak. You don't want to. That's cool.
I didn't make steak.
You're so noble. How about this one? You ought to get this one. Third period ought to get this one. The Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1933 sought to lessen the effects of the Depression by...
destroying or buying up...
both.
It's going to be something...
first destroy, then later pay to not grow.
Okay.
For what purpose?
Can you read it again, because I had to ADD people.
The Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1933 sought to lessen the effects of the Depression by...
having less food in the market.
And creating shortages will help the farmers out. See what the choices are. A, paying farmers to cut production and in some cases destroy crops.
That's true.
I like that. B, purchasing farms and turning them into government collectives.
I don't know.
That's the Soviet Union. That's what they did in the Soviet Union.
What are government collectives?
Government-owned state farms.
Oh.
C, instituting an early retirement program for farmers over age 50.
No, that doesn't exist.
D, encouraging farmers to increase production.
No.
E, subsidizing food processing plants in order to lower food prices.
No.
No, it's A.
A.
Gotta be A. Ooh. Gotta get this one.
Are you checking these in the back? Because sometimes answers seem...
would I miss one, like the first one? Did a sample in government the other day and missed it.
Which year are you doing? Are you on 0203?
I'm on this color.
Hey, you can hear me one. This has the size. I just wanted to read it.
Okay, we were on 79. What's that one? 79 claims to be A. We got it right. Now, look at this one here. Here's a cartoon, and in the cartoon it shows Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, like a Westerner, with a saw, cutting a tree apart. And the tree has a word on it, but with my age, I can't read it. Maybe coal?
Corn.
Corn, okay.
So it's actually
and then there's a
corn, it's not a tree.
And then the
that looked good with these bifocals.
And then there's this...
there's a bulldog in the back named Plenty.
No,
really?
It's not a bulldog. It's got a head of, like, a seed or something.
Uh-oh.
And then there's a guy with a hat that says...
there's words
prices.
On corn prices?
Uh-huh.
You know,
looking at this guy sawing away corn...
no, the guy's...
someone making... it's
oh.
Someone...
we're
burning, they're going to burn up all the corn.
Okay,
all
right.
And then there's this guy looking, I can't believe what the corn prices are. Then there's this corn kernel that's saying there's plenty.
I've got it.
It says coal prices.
I was thinking coal.
On the guy's hat.
Yeah, coal prices.
Coal.
Now look at the bottom here.
And it looks exactly like a dog.
I
have no idea what's going on there.
Someone, I guess it's
hello?
Is that Roosevelt? It is Roosevelt cutting
it,
isn't it?
It doesn't look like
so.
It looks like a bearded. It
no,
looks like a person with a big chin.
Could it be this? Could it be people fighting over the price of coal? Right.
We're going over multiple choices.
Okay, now look at 77 a second.
What is there? We have. There's
wait
a ton of coal in America.
Stay with me here now. Hold on. The question says, the main point of the 1902 political cartoon. Okay, when I hear coal in 1902, I think what?
Factories.
The anthracite coal strike that Roosevelt had to negotiate, right? He arbitrated between workers and owners and forced to use troops to run the mines if they wouldn't come to an agreement.
What does that have to do with corn?
I don't know. That's why
I think it has something to do with destroying corn.
I could be wrong here because there's nothing in the answers well, about...
let's look at the answers. There weren't ethnic...
I cannot answer 77. I have no idea what the hell is going on.
Well,
happening.
Let's see.
Doesn't look anthracite coal strike.
77A, that's not true. So
says
you can't use
claim
it.
C is.
You just told us the answer?
Well, you got it.
I wasn't going to look at the answer.
Why should we fight the one we can't get?
It's C. Well, I mean, A is not true. So we know that's not true.
Close
D doesn't make sense because it's not, they need coal because they don't have back, and then.
In essence, it says in the answer that it shows the tension between city and farms.
And if you look at it, A and B, we wouldn't have picked because they're crazy. E.
D is wrong.
E's not wrong.
You know how I got suckered in? I thought the guy looked like TR, and I saw Cole TR 1902.
And then D. D, maybe, but C is a social issue, and it's the AP test.
Well, it's at this point we need to find one we can get so we can feel good about ourselves.
Okay. But the answer is C.
They claim C.
And what's the reasoning?
It essentially it's depicting the natural tensions between farmers and city life.
Oh. It doesn't matter. It's the only true statement.
Well, then you do better than I would on that one.
Oh gosh.
78.
I know something wrong about
78 that. I dropped in each class once. You ever hear me use the phrase welfare capitalism?
Yeah.
You remember what it was in connection to?
Yeah.
In the 1920s, businesses were expected by Hoover to provide benefits and services for their workers, like unemployment pensions, vacation time, daycare services for children. Instead of that being something the government supplies or provides, the argument that Hoover said was that if businesses will provide their workers with benefits and conditions, we won't have a growth of big government to provide those services like
we did. Does that have something to do with those working farms, working communities?
I don't know about that. But for what I understand, for welfare capitalism is if businesses will provide the benefits by choice.
Is this the Lao girls and stuff?
No. This is 1920s.
And when's the Lao girls?
1820s and 30s. So if businesses will allow or give their workers those benefits, you won't see the need for more regulation and socialism. It's part of the 20s, laissez-faire, free market, hands-off, don't regulate business things. And what about workers who need help? Let the businesses provide them themselves. That's what I imply by that. Let's see what our choices are. Provide social services for unemployed people who live near factory? I'd say no. B, offering workers incentives such as pensions, profit sharing, and dissuade them from joining unions? Yes. That's the part left out of my answer. It's to try to persuade union growth not to happen. It's part of union busting. C, marketing only to those potential countries that are in considerably below the national average? No. D, raising prices in stores? No. Selling invest? I think it's got to be the union thing, B. Is it in the answer?
Oh, that's what you refer to it. Welfare.
I did refer to it before that way.
You refer to it as they were trying to wean them off the union.
That's it. Yeah.
Now, I remember on your list you had pensions and profit sharing.
I did.
On the list. I know you have profit sharing on the list.
Wow. Yeah. I think you read that somewhere.
I thought I read it in the type that you.
Maybe I did. We better mosey to the essays before people start to lose interest. Hey, we won that one. We won that last game. The last question. We're feeling good about ourselves again.
Yes.
Well, here are all the essays that could come up. I bet you want to hear part two first, and here's why. Part one, you took in class and took tests and studied in fear for. Part two has all been after school, mostly, or on the tape. So let's do part two. What kind of issues occur during the Gilded Age? Civil service reform, definitely. So that comes into political corruption. And what law did that? Right on. What are some other big topic issues? Here's what I would go with. Race relations in the South. Jim Crow laws. Disfranchised voters. The difference between Du Bois and what's his name?
Washington.
And their attitudes towards improving races. What Supreme Court case is critically important for that time period?
What?
Plessy versus Ferguson of 1896 establishes the standard that segregation will be legal. Okay, another issue that comes out of the Gilded Age? Immigration. What do you need to know about immigration?
Southern and Eastern.
Who came in what years? 1860 to 1890 is Waspy Northwest. 1890 to World War One is Southern and Eastern European. Mm-hmm. World War One slows it down. When they resume, what's the reaction?
They pass laws to restrict it.
And they focus on the 1890 base year, and they just cut out all Asians. Okay, what's true about the West? Mm-hmm. Give me some West stuff. What happened in the West? What happened to white people in the West? We know what, we're going to talk Indians different. Well, they got land and went out there and became farmers.
Yeah.
That's about all I know. What gave them the land? Homestead Act?
Oh, wait, when was the moral?
That was
same time period, yeah. But morals about colleges.
Can you say what the Pendleton Act was?
It created the civil service reform, which meant that if you want a federal job, you have to pass a test.
Oh.
So even if you're still a political appointment as a friend, you have to at least read and write. It also is associated with the fact that, well, what happened in 1881, 2 years before the Pendleton Act, which is Pendleton Act related?
Who's this Pendleton?
Oh, he was the vice presidential candidate in one of the elections, but he's a senator from somewhere. Garfield was shot. And what did the guy who shot him say when he shot him?
I wanted him.
Yeah, now Arthur's president. Like, Arthur's going to give him a job out of, you know, favor for making him president. Arthur had been a stalwart. Stalwarts believed in using patronage or giving away jobs to get favors. So this guy thought that Arthur would be so full of appreciation for becoming president, he'd give him a job. He didn't. In fact, after Arthur became president, he signed into law the Pendleton Act because of all the publicity about getting jobs led to the point where people kill people to get jobs. So they needed civil service.
I remember. What was the thing you said after immigration?
I was working on in the West. White people got land through the Homestead Act and went west.
So Western expansion.
Uh-huh. Didn't they also get there on railroads?
Yes.
So railroads expanded out west. That's all I think of that they do out there. What about Indians out west? Yeah, from the 1870s through 1887, let's say. From 1877 to 1887, give me some Indian facts.
Well, that's where the Indians are moving, westward.
Well, the Plains Indians are different from the Eastern Indians.
Oh, we're talking about Plains Indians?
Yeah, not the ones forced out of Georgia.
Like Chief Joseph?
Yes. These are war nomadic, hunt the buffalo type people.
Aren't these the civilized tribes?
That's the Eastern.
Okay.
These are the ones that would be considered so-called uncivilized because they are warlike and do not plant and farm. And they're first put on reservations, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't believe in property lines, so they wander off the reservations, leading to numerous conflicts and troubles. Name some battles.
Wounded Knee.
1890. And Little Bighorn in 1876. Despite the battles that were even won by Indians, in the long run, what happened to them?
They just retreated.
Put back onto reservations by force. And the thinking is, we're going to have continual trouble with these people until they become what?
So white.
White civilized. And so how do we turn them from tribal nomadic hunters of buffalo, which don't exist anymore because they killed them off?
Give them land.
Give them land, become farmers, teach them English, make them Christians. All that came from the, what she said. Dawes Severalty Act. Yeah, so the Dawes Act's purpose was to strip them of this nomadic hunting tribal cultural identity. And of course it failed. Okay, another part of the Gilded Age. How about the growth of big businesses and monopolies? Can you name any industrialists and the profession they worked in?
Carnegie Steel.
Morgan Banking, Carnegie Steel.
Pullman.
Vanderbilt Railroads, Pullman Railroads, Rockefeller Inn, Carnegie Inn. Okay, these people all became quite wealthy by building up big businesses, and some of them, including Rockefeller, created what? And to go after monopolies, you had to have what? And was it enforced?
No,
not for a while.
No, they used to break up unions.
Right. Finally, in the first test case that it failed in was
E.C.
Knight in 1895, the sugar wholesaler. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Who is it?
Good luck on it. See you next week if you want to come. We'll be doing it for sure on Tuesday, Wednesday. I'll do a little bit tomorrow, and for sure Tuesday, Wednesday for a long time. I have to go to a banquet tomorrow at the 6:30.
What time is that tomorrow?
As soon as everybody gets their food.
Is it a government?
No, it's you. Oh, no, I meant Monday. Tomorrow I have to do government. So. I was thinking today is Sunday.
Yeah, tomorrow is definitely government only, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is us.
Morgan's Bank, Banking, Rockefeller Steel, Vanderbilt's Road.
Rockefeller Oil.
Oh.
Carnegie Steel. J.P. Morgan is both oil and steel, but banking and steel, but it's primarily banking.
What's Vanderbilt?
Vanderbilt's Railroads.
Rockefeller Steel.
Yeah.
And then Carnegie's.
Carnegie Steel. Want to hear an interesting essay from years back? It was, pick any two or three of the following four and analyze their attitudes about wealth. The choice was like Rockefeller, Bellamy, Jane Addams, Eugene V. Debs, and Vanderbilt.
Some feel responsibility to help others. Some want them to pull themselves up. Some don't believe.
I guess we
should put names.
The railroad tycoons, like Vanderbilt, oil refiner Rockefeller, how would they differ from socialist Debs and Settlement House Jane Addams?
Rockefeller wanted to just appease them to keep them from rising up and rebelling.
Well, what are the attitudes are about wealth?
But Addams is just about health. Why is she in a wealth question?
Well, who did she service?
People in the.
So therefore, what would her attitude about wealth be?
Spread it.
How to help them get it? How to make things more fair and just? What would Rockefeller's attitude be?
Well, every man should make his own wealth.
That's right. And government law should not be protecting the weak. But instead of creating an open market, a level playing field for everybody to do on their own.
Isn't Rockefeller the same person who said we should create things, we should give money to... Isn't Rockefeller the... Maybe that's Vanderbilt.
I think Carnegie.
Carnegie was a philanthropist. Okay. Carnegie also believed in a market situation where you don't regulate or give assistance. But he said that people who are rich owe an obligation privately, not through government, but by charities.
That's Carnegie?
That's Carnegie. But you see how interesting that question goes? You wouldn't think of a question like that. What it really demands, though, is you know who these people are. Now, this is a rare type of question. Another one that was a really odd one that came up was on your packet I gave you here, if I can find it. It was... listen to this one. This is a really very unusual question. Analyze the contributions of any two of the following in helping establish a stable government after the adoption of the Constitution. Okay, so analyze the contributions of any two people, in helping establish a stable government after the adoption of the Constitution. Choices include John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. Nothing about the war. It's after the Constitution is established. What can you name? Take any of those two people and tell what they did to establish stability in government.
Can't think of any specific
things. What Thomas Jefferson
was about helping the farmer.
Thomas Jefferson, Constitution?
After the Constitution's adopted, what did Adams, Jefferson, and Washington do to keep the government stable?
Well, we have the Jeffersonians, and then you can use Washington for the Federalists, almost.
That's where I'd go is you can fight out the Hamilton-Jefferson differences by using Washington because he endorsed most of Hamilton's programs. He wasn't a Federalist, but he approved of most of Hamilton's
programs. And who was the third choice?
John Adams.
Forget that guy. He's Washington's VPs.
Yeah, but he also, didn't he become president in 96?
Okay, you could do the same thing.
I mean, they didn't give you a time limit. They said after the adoption, that could be all the way to 2007, if anybody lives that long. So what did John Adams do that was...
John Adams and Jefferson were president and VP in Maine.
Okay. Did he do more than be a vice president? Did he do anything as a president that established the
building? John Adams? He was pro-business. Federalist?
He was a Federalist, I guess.
Did he try to get anything going like with
that? I'm thinking this, and this is where one of the sample questions I was going to read anyway, is that from 1796 onward, 1791 to 96 is four reports get everything established in the business situation. Most of your business from 96 onwards, foreign policy. Mm-hmm. Jay's Treaty, Pinckney's Treaty.
And it's just French or England, which ones? And
by negotiating Jay and Pinckney's Treaty, do you create any stability for our government?
Yes.
In his way of responding to the XYZ affair insult, millions for dissent, not one cent for tribute. Did his government stand up to the insults of France?
We didn't pay.
But then we got into a war with France, right? Over the XYZ affair?
Yeah.
Did that create stability or threaten stability?
Well,
so I would say
we were
analyze the contribution. My analysis would be he weakened our stability by causing a war with France.
That's a great response.
Yeah. And then also, what about the Alien Sedition Acts? Didn't that Sedition Act endangered First Amendment rights? Did that increase stability by threatening free speech, or did it increase stability by shutting up those damn protesters?
Free response is where you have another choice, right?
Often you have another choice. Oh, yeah, one of two. Oh. You saying you wouldn't take that question?
No.
I most likely wouldn't.
Well, the thing I'm saying is it's very rare for them to pick people. Usually it's issues. But on that wealth question on this one, they gave you people to analyze. And what
I
you
like the wealth
do.
One.
Yeah,
I like the wealth one because you don't have to know names of policies.
But as long, but you have to know something about people's lives.
Yeah. It's a lot, that's easier to remember.
Have you looked at this yet, the essay prompts?
No.
Gave that out in class. It's all the essay prompts for the last, 8 years. Broken into categories, subject like... More Gilded Ageness. Can you give me anything that happened about railroads?
The
West
Continental one.
As authorized by what law?
Transcontinental or the
National Railway.
Pacific Railway.
Pacific Railway.
What did it connect?
Well, the West and East railroad systems.
Right. And you remember the immigrants that worked and where it connected and all that? In fact, it was a little bit of a scandal.
Point.
Yeah. That would be
a lot of Asian immigrants working on it and Irish immigrants.
Right, right. What do you know about mining?
It was dangerous in the Chinese were used for the most dangerous.
Why did you get those minorities back in the question? And
strike.
Back east, there was the Irish mine workers in 1875, since it's called Mullen Maguire. Out west, the Chinese are working. It's gold and silver. It does much to draw.
You know what Mullen Maguire is from, the name? Uh-huh. It was Irish men that dressed up as women.
Huh.
And went to the wood and robbed Englishmen.
Wow.
With her.
I often wondered why it had such a feminine name.
It's a long boy. According to a history channel documentary with Kirk Crafty.
Oh. All right. I think we've done the Gilded Age. Except for Gilded Age politics. Do you know what the populists were upset about and what was in their planks? You will.
Earlier in the day,
you will, okay. And did you know how the populists influenced the 1896 election with William Jennings Bryan being a candidate? You will.
They dropped out and nominated him. Along with no candidate.
And if you know the silver issue, be sure to know the freak Bob Metallic.
Yeah,
I know you're getting kind of overdosed and bored now, but your test is not tomorrow. So when you get rested and feel courageous enough to tackle it, learn the populists in the 1896 election stuff. Here's one that we've done over and over, so you know you should know it. Let's talk foreign policy in Latin America, and let's talk foreign policy in China.
Which first?
Well, if I gave you an essay, trace American foreign policy in Latin America from 1898 to 1933, what's your bullet points? Let's do it chronologically. Spanish-American War in 1898.
You get
lands. And then in 1901, you get a little more control over Cuba through the
Platt Amendment.
Teller said we wouldn't do it. Platt said yes, we will.
Which was first?
Teller. Teller says we're not going to annex any land.
And then Platt says we have a naval base and
you can't borrow money, we can protect you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in 1904.
Kind of set, those are the time that we kind of set up the whole policy?
I think so. How about the Panama Canal event in 1903? Did we have any involvement in that?
Yeah.
We
helped Panama break away from Colombian Revolution. And then in 1904, when the Europeans tried to invade to collect their debts, what did we declare? Okay, then by Taft's time in 1909, we're saying we'll protect business over human rights through the... So all of that creates what kind of atmosphere towards us?
We don't care about them. We just want our land and like.
So do we ever start doing something to regain some friendship?
Not in that time.
But it's written by communism. We do.
So 1928, we do the Clark Memorandum. It's Nazism first.
What's Clark Memorandum?
Clark Memorandum says we will no longer exercise Roosevelt Corollary on you guys. Then in 1933, we do the Good Neighbor Policy, in which we won't even do dollar diplomacy on you guys anymore. And then in 1934, we repeal the Platt Amendment except for the base. And all that so you guys won't be Nazis. And by the way, during the Depression, let's have some business.
One.
So there's our essay. But then all of a sudden it comes back. And in the 1950s and 60s and 70s and 80s, we're back with worrying about upsetting Latin Americans.
There's another half to this. You said Latin America and China. Right?
Yeah, we'll come to the China in a minute. Why, if the Nazis are defeated, why can't we go back to shitting on the Latin Americans again? And that's figurative. Yes, and who are the communists?
Ruska.
Working through their agent where?
Cuba.
Yeah,
Cuba.
Called Castro, right?
Yeah, Cuba.
And as what we studied earlier today, the Grenada invasion and the Nicaragua problems are related to that too, right?
Where's Grenada? The Caribbean?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, China. Starting in 1899, John Hay announces what?
Open door policy.
What event threatens the open door policy first?
No.
A year later, Boxer uprising. Second round of open door notes comes, not carved up.
We tell them, Japan.
Do not carve up China.
Yeah, we said.
Then Japan in 1904 battles with whom?
Russia.
And we put a stop to that through what?
The
yeah. Roosevelt does to Japan and Russia what he did in 1902 to the coal workers and the coal mine owners, a forced arbitration meeting. Gets a treaty. Those relations are strained in 1906 through what incident? Yep, school kids and gentlemen's agreement.
Oh, okay.
San Francisco denies the school kids. Then after that's settled, the gentleman's agreement, he sends the Great White Fleet on a we can kick your ass tour, you can't do ours.
What?
Remember that?
No.
The Great White Fleet in 1908 goes on a world tour with drop-ins in Japan, which give the impression that we can come bomb you, but you don't have a fleet that can come bomb us. So while we want you to be happy with this after the gentleman's agreement, remember who's boss.
Now, are we talking about Japan? Or?
Yeah. Why is that anything related to China?
Because they want to take China.
Because they're the threat to China. They're the greatest threat to China. We want to keep them neutral on this. Then they're in a way, the Washington Naval Conference is kind of open doorish, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because the four-power and nine-party treaties really just say everybody respects everybody's possessions, meaning...
But only in Japan doesn't.
But then listen to what
happens. What's this Washington Naval... I remember this. Did you just say something?
We wouldn't join the league, but we did agree to arms disarmament in the conference in Washington.
We gave Japan the ability to get more, but we still eventually less.
So in 1931, what does Japan do?
The building. In 1931, they
take over
attack
Manchuria. Mm-hmm. And what do we do? I mean, that's a violation of open door when you carve off a chunk of China.
We're in the Depression.
We issued the Stimson Doctrine.
And we issued what?
The Stimson Doctrine in 1933, which says... We refuse to recognize any gains in China made by force, which the Japanese interpret to mean. In other words, you're not going to do anything about it. There's no more open door. So then they go and invade all of China in 1937. They even sink one of our ships, gunboats, the Panay on the Yangtze River.
Oh, the river for no reason at all.
Yeah. Do we go to war and defend China?
No, because why would we?
We were isolationists in the 30s.
So we said we're not going to recognize Japan's expanding
into Manchukuo.
But they can keep expanding?
Well, it doesn't mean much to say we don't recognize something if you're not going to militarily kick them out.
Okay.
Then in 1941, how do relations get strained?
Does China stop trading with us if they won't help us?
Start dropping bombs on us?
No.
We're talking about China.
Right.
So Japan...
Why am I on all this Japan stuff?
Japan actually bombs us. Then do we do something about China?
Yep, we go liberate them.
China has been
through World War II.
So
your essay is, let me restructure the essay I wished I had been addressing. Trace American relations with China and Japan from 1899 to 1941.
And Chiang Kai-shek was over here appealing.
And in a sense, the story continues on, because after the World War II, there's a Chinese revolution. And we wished that Chiang would win, but the communists do instead. So then we side with Taiwan for all those years.
The gentleman's agreement was Japan, right? So not China.
It's Japan. But the reason I kept throwing Japan into the story is because that's who's the biggest threat to China. We perceive.
To the open door policy.
Yeah. Well, that was an easy one. Here's one you won't like. I don't either. Okay. Two choices. One is trace the study of Aztec gods in the American Southwest.
What?
Okay, so you don't know that one.
Okay.
So your other choice that you gotta take.
Oh, you have that whole.
That wasn't cool.
You have that whole white man's thing. And then that's one of the reasons.
While we're not on it, don't forget the Great Columbian Exchange.
What is that exchange of what? Ideas?
I've got it.
Diseases? Yeah. That was it. I remember that. We got it. You don't have to look it up.
Put that back.
Sweet potatoes for syphilis? It is, isn't it?
And some gold.
Look at this. You know what this was years ago? No, it wasn't something else. I found a NAG quiz bowl list from years ago.
What's a NAG?
My God.
It was picking out all the stuff they had missed at a tournament and showed the whole category over the weekend and says, are we going to lose because of this? Doesn't anybody care? Et cetera, et cetera. It was cool. It was like a good old NAG day.
I remember the days when I used to eat food.
Shut up, Jimmy. You're so lazy. That's all the reason you're anorexic. The food.
Great Columbian Exchange is coming up here.
I think we said we know what that is.
We know what that
is. Don't make sure.
Don't
you care?
I've lost what it is.
You're not a patriot.
Here it is, biological exchange. An enormously influential exchange occurred when the Europeans landed in America, generally to the benefit of Europeans and detrimental to the white people. Or to the native people, I'm sorry. So that fits the theme why they'd ask it, right?
Oh, we did give them points.
Europeans did.
How does that have to do with their religious gods?
We're off on something else.
That was a joke.
Sugar and bananas crossed the Atlantic, while pigs, sheep, and cattle arrived in the Americas.
About horses.
However, Europeans' diseases such as influenza, typhus, and measles, and smallpox also crossed the Atlantic and devastated Native American populations. So it looks like while pigs, sheep, and cattle arrived, so did a bunch of diseases. But we got sugars and bananas.
But we got
gold, right? Gold and silver. Yeah.
Pepper.
Oh, that's true.
We got pepper.
Spices.
Tomatoes.
Here's the, okay, it's Aztec gods, the Great Columbian Exchange, or, they gave you three choices this time, the one you got to take, analyze the successes and failures of the progressive movement.
Columbian Exchange?
From 1901 to 1960 in reforming America.
That's a really long question.
In the realm of business and government.
I didn't do Aztec gods. I got the base knowledge.
Not going to do progressivism.
You'll be the only person. They want anyone to compare you to, so you should just do it.
What would you say if you had to write a progressive essay?
I'd kill myself.
You'll learn it from Friday. What is in bullet
points? We can do that one right now.
Okay.
Really,
let's do what we can of it. What are some progressive reforms? What are some progressive ideologies?
Laissez-faire.
What?
Laissez-faire was under attack, I'd say.
No, it was help.
The opposite of laissez-faire.
Help the little man.
All right. Help them from the rich.
In fact, I know a thesis.
From the big monopoly.
Even without facts, we got a thesis here.
I know the first half of the thesis before you say all the general things.
Okay.
As we know today, many liberals happily claim the title of progressive. And, blah, 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 this is why.
Well, you got some ideology going, that it was a liberal reform movement.
So it, what it did was it...
Oh, yeah,
monopolies.
Oh, there you go. Now we got some facts. It regulated monopolies.
T.R. was the trust buster.
Yes, he was.
Or was he?
Liberal reforms.
Seriously, what we're doing is what you got to do. Think of whatever government. You can, put it together. Corruption in government, trust busting, Theodore Roosevelt, monopolies.
Tammany Hall,
helping the little man against all these.
Yeah,
women
city,
get a
city
role.
Governments.
Women find roles in this.
Rosie.
Improving the plight of
Hull
women.
Hull House.
Yes, she's a little before progressivism, but she precludes progressive spirit.
And then, weren't there these farms where people worked a whole lot? Like, they created factory communities almost. Stop.
Is this the great collectivist pogroms of the 1920s?
The ones that failed, yes.
This is a Russian thing.
Okay, you guys keep talking.
Half the time he reads America, the other half the time he reads Russia.
He reads all the stuff that I don't know about. It embarrasses him.
No, it's in this book. This is all I read.
Well, let's do what we know so far. Corruption in government, corruption in business, laws and people. Okay.
Laws.
In responding to corrupt city governments, what kind of reform ideas were put forward? How to take care of...
Well, what about the Teapot Dome Scandal? Did that happen in this time?
1922.
That's too far.
We've narrowed our focus to 1960. 1900 to 1960.
Okay.
Right. What if you have corrupt machine governments... Yeah, what are some new ideas of how to have honest city governments, new plans?
Clayton. No, that's
the... It's a C thing. City manager and commission forms of government.
Oh, yeah.
Those are replacement for corrupt city governments. At the state level, what are some reforms that would make things less corrupt at the state level? Pioneered, by the way, by the Wisconsin idea, Robert La Follette Mann.
Was that where you could
building scene
referendum initiative what's the one where you can referendums where you can pull the guy out of office?
Recall.
Okay. What's referendum
and initiative is where you
A referendum promotes an initiative. Vote on an amendment.
Yes.
So
recall kicks him out of office. Direct primary, you choose your candidates before the general election through your party. Get rid of the boss candidate.
And then
Australian ballot, secret ballot. How about let's get some national amendments going? Name the four national amendments that are progressive. Income tax is legal. Direct election of senators, reinforcing our democracy theory. The more you belong to
prohibition.
Chicks can vote. That's all progressive.
What was 20?
Lame duck.
That's in.
Anything else progressive that went on? The TR enforced progressivism. The Elkins Act, the Hepburn Act, regulating railroads. Antitrust is enforced, finally, through the Northern Securities Act. The Clayton Act during the Wilson years is farmers and labor organizations are not subject. Here's a comparison they'll ask you to make. Compare progressivism during Roosevelt's time, how it differed from Wilson's time.
Wilson tried to be like a lord.
At first. I mean, no, not at first, and then he came around to be.
What did Douglas have to do with
the 50s. He's the Secretary of State for Eisenhower during the role.
Wait, who went into Africa after TR?
Gifford Pinchot, your buddy. Which brings up what three things claim that make Taft look unprogressive?
That, the...
Speaker fight, the Payne-Aldrich terror.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't hurt you to find somewhere my sheets or something, and pull out key people and key events. You probably won't have to write a progressive essay, but at least looking at it will familiarize you with multiple choice.
We should do a poll.
The thing was Brook Farm and all those things.
That's the Transcendentalist in the 1840s.
Okay, and when's progressivism?
1900 to
1960. I thought those centuries mixed
up. What is the burnt over district?
Part of New York, northern New York.
It's around Buffalo, New York, Niagara Falls area.
The Tyndall's description.
1830s.
Their description of all these utopian communes, I don't know if later on they talk about it, but it really reminded me of the Jonestown thing. And the way they were describing it reminded me of like interviews I've heard from those people.
Yes, that's true. Did you read about Oneida?
Yes.
What happened at Oneida?
It was the, everyone was mad to them.
And the governor, the governor was, for what, and then the leader of it said that he was the superior one, and then when he was 80 years old, there's like the 16-year-old girl or something, and then he said, I'm still the superior one. Where they match up the ones that are at the same level.
And that's in the, 1830s and 40s?
What is that? What's that called? Oneida?
Mm-hmm. And they became famous for making silverware and spoons.
And having sexual
intercourse with men while they could.
They're not trying to ride it.
No.
And then the reason they could survive was because they did detailed stuff instead of the mask.
Sun is getting low.
But yeah, pay no attention to that. If I say these three names, Alice Paul, Carrie Chapman Catt, if I say those two names and leave off the third name, you'll get it on the third name. What are those two related to?
American history?
Okay, if it's Aztec gods or this one, you got to take it.
Aztec gods?
Susan B. Anthony.
Oh, God. Okay. Women's stuff.
Aside from naming those three people, what can you say about the suffragette movement?
It wasn't welcomed by all women.
That a lot of women felt that the ones who wanted it were too radical.
But they, because of the help that the role women had played in wars, that gave them.
Especially World War One.
Okay.
Because when was
Susan B. Anthony?
She was came right out. She got started at an early age after the Seneca Falls, like in the 1850s. And was lived up to like 1906. So while she didn't come around to World War One, she was such an important mover and shaker that she inspired people like Alice Paul to continue on.
Is this the Seneca Falls Convention?
Seneca Falls is in 1848, but we're going all the way up to 1919.
This is where we're in 1919. Right?
Because that's when the amendment passes, isn't it?
And that's the 20th
Amendment passes in 1919, allowing 1920 to be the first election. So while there was great opposition. You could say this, that the more democratic spirit of the progressive era finally pushed things over the top to achieve the amendment. See, you thought you knew nothing, you had a little something there. That's worth 4 on the essay.
What, you just had tried to talk about them collectively?
Yeah, if you could put forward a grandiose thesis and throw a few names out there, you got a 5 to 6 on that essay. Better than the Aztecs.
No.
I think I can take that.
Of course, you can already do the Cold War. We've already done that.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
You can do the 20s because we've done it in class recently, right?
Wilson.
Wilson is out of office. Yeah, Harding, Coolidge, Hoover.
Yep.
It's returned to normacy in business situations. It's also. If you had to address this question. Well, the 1920s are generally seen as a fun, frolicking period called the Roaring Twenties, many say it was a very hateful, reactionary turn back to the past era. Analyze this with no choices. Think of them all yourself, buddy. Okay, the rise of the Klan?
Acts against the immigration.
Immigration restrictions. That's two bullet points.
How many do we need?
3 looks good. Klan and immigration, we got it. Anything else? How about killing Sakon Vanzetti?
When's Prohibition?
This time period.
Okay.
Yes, Prohibition's a good one.
Sakon
Vanzetti are killed, they're executed through the Red Scare for accusation of robbing and killing the mail car. How about Scopes Trial?
Gosh, I know. Scopes Trial.
Yeah.
As you see on these, they often give you choice, right? They often give you something to choose from.
Right.
But sometimes they just give you a statement with no choices. You'll remember things, though, won't you?
Scopes Trial.
They're going to go for the choice ones.
I'll look at the multiple choices for a little while and see if it inspires me. If I can't.
And you can do the New Deal because we're doing the New Deal, right?
Yes.
Can you do the World War II, pre-war and war? We've done that.
Yes.
We've done it after school. Has anybody studied it and feel like there's a test coming on it?
What is school stuff is clicking a lot better than the second class.
No, I've taken the notes. I was highlighted
much less.
So the pre-war isolationism of the 30s and then the change of the World War II thing. And then you got the Cold War. We did that today up to 1949.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the Eisenhower 50s and Cuban Missile Crisis, Kennedy 60s and that kind of stuff. You can do Vietnam. We did that. Can you do this one? Assess the social changes experienced, social, economic, and political changes experienced by women, blacks, and Native Americans from 1920 to 1970 or something.
Blacks, women, Native Americans, that's the order of voting rights.
Desegregation, the armed forces.
Armed forces service.
And the ACE code. Randolph, what was he wanting desegregated?
Defense plans.
Okay, with those.
And since it's gone all the way up to 1970, you can say how it finally figured into the civil rights movement of the 50s. Yeah. Women's roles. Either
Randolph did something else.
Pullman was organizing. So I think you can do it.
What was the other thing Randolph did? Pullman and what?
The March on Washington in 1963. One of the organizers at the end of his life. Okay. The Dream Speech. Indians, I haven't told you this, we will in the 1930s. Give you a little quick story about Indians. You know, in 1887, the Dawes Act made them become farmers and give up their tribal identity. And that pretty well failed because they got the worst land, the reservation, Bureau of Indian Affairs people were corrupt politicians. So in 1924, they become citizens, right? Act of Congress. Why did Congress give Indians citizenship in 24? Choctaw service in World War I doing code talking, which is a lot more by the World War II through the Navajo. In the 1930s, there was an act called the Indian Reorganization Bill.
I know what it is.
Tell us that. I think it's also called the Wheeler-Rayburn Act.
It's where they...
Wheeler-Howard Act, I'm sorry.
They want them to go back to their tribal nature.
They allow them to.
Or they let them, I guess, and then they can have their respective chiefs or something be governed again like that.
Yep, sure is. So you'd say during the New Deal, there was allowing Indians to pursue their own self-determination as they would wish back in their tribal ways?
That's the Wheeler-Davis?
Wheeler-Howard Act. Because the Wheeler-Rayburn Act regulated utility companies.
And what's the other name for it?
Indian Reorganization Bill.
That sounds good.
If you got a question that said, compare the Carter administration to the Reagan administration, or compare the Johnson administration to the Kennedy, or Hoover to FDR's way of approaching depression, can you compare the differences between two presidents of different parties that are divided by an election year?
Yes.
Okay. That's the second half of the course. First half of the course.
Oh, no.
Colonial essays. Progressivism versus colonialism.
Holy crap.
What? Here's what I think they'll ask you to know. Okay. Compare North New England colonies, society, life, economics, etc., to that of the Chesapeake colonies. Who are the Chesapeake colonies?
Puritans,
New England.
Oh. Ooh.
Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Chesapeake is Virginia, Maryland. No, the Chesapeake Bay is.
What happens in those states?
Slavery, redneckism.
That's the Chesapeake.
Sweat.
The Chesapeake.
Basketball.
Chesapeake's the racist one.
Oh, that's on tape too. How sensitive I sound. No, I don't know if this is all going online.
I'm sure they're. I bet they're making fun of.
That's the Chesapeake Bay right there, where Virginia, Delaware, and Maryland are. This is New England up here with Massachusetts colonies of Plymouth and Puritan Massachusetts Bay. What? Tell us about life and society in Virginia and Maryland in the 1600s.
Slavery
replaced what? Slavery replaced
Catholicism.
Indentured servitude. Both indentured servants and slaves worked in what kind of work?
Crop
growing. What were the crops grown early on?
Tobacco.
Instead of cotton.
Tobacco and indigo first, cotton later, right?
And that wasn't a whipping attitude. That was you could get out of it at some point.
The indentured servants, whether they were bonded or non-bonded, usually were freed and given land and became citizens who also sponsored more workers through the headright system. What were they there primarily for religious reasons?
Chesapeake.
They're there for business, yeah.
Well, maybe men have been.
But they may have been Anglicans, but that wasn't their reason.
The original founders of Maryland.
Now, which this is Catholic, Chesapeake,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Catholics came to Maryland, but not enough of them. That's why they allowed Puritans to come.
And that's because there's a land shortage in England.
Right. Oh. And a people shortage in the colonies. So let's get those people here. This Catholic Protestant mix in Maryland, didn't that run the risk of like a 30 years war?
No.
Why not?
A ton of space.
Well, in addition to the land, didn't they pass a Toleration Act in 1654?
Yeah, and then the Protestants tried to kick up.
So they overturned the act. 1649 when they did it.
This is Chesapeake?
This is Maryland, where that happened.
Which is Chesapeake?
It's Chesapeake. We're still all Chesapeake here, still probably. Now we go up to New England. Name the two earliest New England colonies.
Massachusetts.
And?
New Amsterdam. New York.
How about Plymouth?
Plymouth
Pilgrims and Massachusetts Bay Puritans.
Oh, I thought you said
colonies. Is Rhode Island the last?
New England, just New England.
But those are the other colonies.
Rhode Island comes pretty soon, really.
Yeah.
What's his name? Roger Williams and Ann Hutchinson all take off in 1636 to form Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's right, because they believe
so what we really need to know about our colonial area is name of colony, group of people who moved there, if religion was a factor, and if so, what's their religion? What's the name of the company, if it's a company? Will you do that? I know you're kind of worn down mentally, but like your progressive, like your populist and William Jennings Bryan, are you going to look up all your colonial facts? Each colony, who's the founder, who's the company, what's the religion, what's the economics? Here's some more colonialists. About an uprising in 1676 where they take over Jamestown for a while.
Shay?
Bacon's.
Bacon's
rebellion. Because of the
Indians. Shay's in 1787, Massachusetts, yes.
Mm. What's Bacon's?
Here's an essay you could do really well with. If I say, assess the power and economic struggles between the East and the West, or the Tidewater and the Frontier, by choosing any two of the following three, and I give you Bacon's Rebellion, the Regulator Movement, the Paxton Boys, or Shays Rebellion, or even the Whiskey Rebellion.
When you say Western, we're still speaking in colonial terms?
Yes. Everything from Appalachia is your West.
Okay.
Whiskey Rebellion.
Whiskey Rebellion was enticed. It was Whiskey Rebellion was
Hamilton
excise tax
desired, but the only
off the corn growers in the Appalachians,
right? But
demonstrate the power.
We're comparing East and West. Well,
my thesis for all of this is I've got a better thesis than I have facts on this. Is Western people felt themselves to be overtaxed, underrepresented in government, and underprotected by Indians out west because Eastern Seaboard elites packed their legislatures with themselves and overtaxed people and underprotected people.
But they were able to unite.
However,
terrible.
So the great question is, what was the revolution to occur? All of America versus Britain or East versus West?
Well, you have to, can't fight. Goes against Britain.
The East-West tensions are there. They're workable all the way through.
East versus West.
That's
very
true.
You know what the Halfway Covenant was about?
Yeah.
Good.
No, I don't know.
Jesus pointed three times to us.
I don't think he's.
We're always like, no. I'm serious.
Okay, here's where it goes. When people set up Massachusetts Bay, it figures into our discussion. Why did people come to Massachusetts Bay Colony?
To escape religious persecution.
Not only escape religious persecution, but build a city upon a hill, which is the role model, correct community like God wants it. And everybody had that sense of mission in the beginning. But when
is
you have
Governor
second...
Winthrop,
yes. Oh. Bradford is Pilgrim, Winthrop is the Puritans. When you have second and third generation Massachusetts citizens, their mom and dad may have come over for the Lord, but these people have got headphones on. They're not taking notes. They're just, you know... They just don't have the same commitment as the original Puritans.
Amish.
In addition to that, they move west. If you get so far west, they can't even go to church anymore. By third generation, you've got people that were never really seriously religious, that were born without being baptized. But we have a dilemma. The church has said you cannot vote in political elections unless you're a church member, and we don't want anybody a church member unless they're sincerely faithful.
But if you get to the point where you have more people who are not church members than church, how can you continue to keep that as a requirement for voting?
Have a great revival.
You either have a great revival or you weaken the rules.
That too.
We'll get, let D's go all the way down to 52%. You can be a halfway member.
If you get 9 out of 52, you still get an A.
I had people that didn't get 9 out of 52.
That was probably me. You actually gave us 9 answers.
I tried.
No, you told us. At least you told us five. And then I kept hearing the class discussion in one corner, looking at the sheets, saying the answers very loudly.
Jones, is that an act or a tarot? Yeah, that's a tarot. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. But this
start with an M.
Number 23 on the note outline.
Halfway Covenant says you can be a member of the church, thus vote in political elections, but you cannot be a leader in the church leadership council and you can't receive communion. Which did not make people become sincere. It watered things even down. And that's 1662. 30 years later, because there's such a loss of faith and dedication, we have to use a terror campaign to get them back in line called
Awakening.
Salem Witch Trial.
Oh my gosh!
1691. And after the Salem Witch Trial, people are so backlashed and angry, people are really leaving faith, so that's when you need
Great Revival?
Yep.
Great meetings?
Great Awakening. Great Awakening first. It's the Great Revival or the Second Great Awakening a century later, and going through the Appalachian West. With tent meetings and people speaking in tongues.
And what happened in the first Great Revival?
This is George Whitfield from Virginia and Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God guy in the north.
If we go,
Jonathan Edwards.
If we can,
I you need to just look at what the Great Awakening is about. Read about it because it'll come up. Could be the essay.
Would it benefit me to come today to go on the thing tomorrow because it's like all the same material?
Very little.
Very little.
It'd be fun.
Benefit from
it'd be fun, world. But as far as what you need, if you spent the time at home reading, you'd be better on.
Is it like a civics class?
Yeah.
Kind of empowerment is?
It's powers of president, powers of courts, powers of. Okay. Occasionally a historic thing will pop up, but you'd already know it anyway.
Okay. It has shades of.
You're welcome to come to be a part of it, but your time would be more valuable invested by studying, building your 3 or 4 point bullet point outlines for these things like this. If you don't know Halfway Covenant, look at it. If you don't know the Salem Witch Trials, look at that and look at the Great Awakening, especially the ideas behind the Great Awakening. You know what the Middle Passage was?
Yeah, yes.
Slave trade.
And they went from Africa to the Caribbean.
Yeah. And you know what the Triangular Trade's about. Okay. What is true about trade regulation starting after 1660 up through 1763?
Starts getting enforced.
It starts getting passed. They make laws. Occasionally they try to enforce it.
It's cheaper to bribe than to pay the...
Right. After 1725, what's Britain's view of it all? What's Walpole's view of it all?
1725, is that after the French-American War?
No,
we're going to need a revolution, enforcing. No.
That's 1727.
We're going to start paying the governors instead of the colony.
That's 1767. 1725, it's salutary neglect. It's on the books. We ought to enforce it.
Oh, yeah.
But how can you fight French and keep you guys well behaved at the same time? So we're not going to enforce these policies for a while. And it's the French and Indian War when they finally get back to saying, yes, we are not going to do it. So you're into that salutary neglect thing?
I don't know.
Also? Yeah. How about the Dominion of New England? Edmund Andros, Glorious Revolution. Mm-hmm. You look at all that?
What? The Dominion.
It's
another attempt to make us pay navigation laws. They combined all those colonies in New England under the rule of Edmund Andros. But after James II fell from power for being too dictatorial and Catholic, Andros has run off too.
And he sneaks out in a dress. Then he comes back. Yeah, but I don't know any of the names of the important things.
Here's a great, easy essay if you can get it.
But you can really get this one. It's a wonderful essay. And it would help if you go back and memorize this stuff.
That was in the textbook.
Trace stuff from 1763 to 1774. Was the American Revolution a result of American ingratitude or a change in British policy?
Not policy, but enforcement.
What were the new laws and new attitudes, or just enforcement of the old attitude?
It was, we're done with the war, now we want you to pay your taxes.
Okay, so can you name, let's name these together happily and joyously. 1763, name some things.
You want to make you pay taxes?
Oh, God, 1763.
Don't we first try to go into the Indian lands in Ohio?
There's the past Appalachians is closed.
Oh, yeah, but first we got to have a conflict with an Indian.
Okay, so that would be...
somebody's uprising.
Pontiacs.
Pontiacs uprising of 63. Put down with the smallpox blankets given to them. And then we stay out of there through the Proclamation of 1763.
That was the Proclamation.
And just to make sure that everybody behaves themselves, there's a quartering act, which puts 10,000 troops in North America, and they expect us to pay for it. 1765. Then there is the Sugar Act, 64. And the big whopping one that everybody knows, so you got to get this one. What's the 1765 law that even the lazy people that didn't study at all heard in class?
Damn.
Right on.
Oh, gosh. Is that what it was?
The Stamp Act is 65, Currency Act is 64. In fact, resistance to the Stamp Act leads to what? They repeal it, right?
Uh-huh.
But the same day they repeal
the
clause.
Oh, we
say. Declaratory.
Declaratory.
Then a year later, a new Chancellor of the Exchequer, Charles Townshend, comes to the power.
Exchequer.
And he institutes the Townshend taxes on lead, tea, paper, paint, and glass. He also starts paying the governors to enforce the rules. And there's another quartering act. And New York won't do it, so they close down New York because they won't pay for the quartering. What's the reaction? Pardon?
Oh, that's too.
That'll be in 74.
Boston.
Yeah. Then so from 1767 up
you
to...
You said there's a reaction to New York.
I'd say it was.
What was the reaction?
Was it just more...
Well, New York refuses to appropriate money for troops. So they close down the New York legislature as a... If you won't pay for the troops, no legislature for you.
Oh.
And then you could say that between 1760... There's John Dickinson's essay about a letter from a Pennsylvania farmer. Mm-hmm. Explaining why, even though they're not really direct taxes, they feel like direct taxes because we're the only ones that buy lead, tea, paper, paint, and glass. Then there is trouble from 68 to 70. What conflict occurs in 70? Okay, Boston Massacre.
That's in 70?
And the Boston Massacre results in the repeal of all the towns and taxes except one on tea. And from 70 to 73, there is relative calm, except for the burning of the Gaspee in Rhode Island.
Which was maybe just a looting.
Right. Then in 73, Britain passes what's called the Tea Act, giving the British East India Tea Company monopoly choice, which leads to the Tea Party. And the Tea Party is punished by the Intolerable Acts, of course.
All known, of course.
And Chris will memorize all four of those. And following the Intolerable Acts, we say, well, if you're going to do that to us, then we're going to join and have our first
meeting.
Continental Congress. So here back in Albany Conference of 1854, even when we're threatened by French and Indians, we won't unite. But 20 years later, you dump on us enough, we'll have a first Continental Congress. And then we'll have some... militia activity against the British in Boston in 1770.
And there's a terrorist organization that's called
the SOL. Yeah.
Those aren't terrorists, they're freedom fighters.
Yeah.
So you see what's going on from 1763 to 1774? You've got what? 10, 15 facts in there? All you have to know is something that ties them all together. Mm-hmm. What do they all have in common?
We can unite. We can set aside our sexual differences.
Great reluctance. Eventually, common cause and experience drives the colonists to a unity hitherto before unknown.
Because the colonies,
inalienable rights were being denied by the British.
You'd like to get highfalutin.
You have to, and that's all I'm going to be able to do is get a thesis because...
But are you going to memorize these bullet points we just went through? For the here's another free spot on the bingo card. Tell the successes and failures of the Articles of Confederation.
Oh, I hope we get that question.
Well, name a success.
It what got them through the revolution.
Yeah, sure it is. Okay, outside of that, anything...
It created some form of national government.
Citizenship and national government, yes, this will be it.
And a Congress.
The foundation
and
for like all ruling stake. Documents to come.
How did it succeed in addressing Western lands?
We sold them all. We were going
No. We couldn't. We could not sell. We could not get money.
But we tried. Well, they kept the states from shooting each other over it.
Oh, yeah, that was
they got them to surrender the land, and it proposed at least a hopeful plan to raise money without taxing. It didn't work out, but it had a plan.
What the problems?
It's about 2:30 at this time.
Yeah.
Or a little after.
Not much.
Just a little after.
2:30.
A little after 7.
What do you mean 2:30?
7:30 is a reference that means okay. Crazy.
We will when we hit that point, we'll announce it.
Okay,
now we go on here.
Failures.
If they... Oh, yeah, what are some failures?
Everything. There was no...
Don't you see everything? Use something.
No.
There was no central
failure.
Money.
No central currency. Each state printed their own currency. So it's instability in your economy. What else?
Poor regulation of interstate.
I had all
no consistent regulation of trade. So money and trade problems for sure. That's big.
It couldn't raise money either. By
couldn't
tax.
Couldn't pay off the war debt.
Didn't have the phrase "all men are created equal." I don't think that's going to be a seller.
Actually,
that's
are
in
you,
the Declaration.
Are you
so
confused?
It did
oh wait, I'm thinking of Constitution.
<did happen.
laughs>
They couldn't regulate interstate anything.
Okay, what did the Constitution fix? That's how you remember what was wrong.
It was enacted a tax. Congress could tax, created a,
it created
a
executive
better
executive
Congress. Oh, it created three. Branches.
A better representative government, a judiciary system, executive.
Mm-hmm.
It set aside sectional differences.
That would be the great essay. Yes, the great essay would be, in what ways did the adoption of the Constitution correct the failures of the Articles? So that's a killer question.
It appeased to the...
We would be able to do that one.
Yeah, that would be
big
cool.
States.
And you know the Jefferson... It's 1790s. The first half is Jefferson-Hamilton differences. If you remember the four reports and why Hamilton wanted them, why Jefferson didn't, you're all over it.
What was the... Okay, this is just one specific thing. What was the basic idea of the report on manufacturing?
That failed?
Yeah.
Gosh, that was
high
was
tariffs, grants of money or bounties to industries.
Okay.
Then the second half of the 1790s is primarily foreign policy stuff. 1794 Jay's Treaty, 1795 Pinckney's Treaty, 1796, something I forgot, 1797. I think the French insulted us. 1797 was the XYZ affair. 1798, war with France, Alien Sedition Acts. That's good stuff there. The 1790s, I don't know. Why is it great? Trace American foreign policy from 1793 to 1815. You got Genet's visit, 93.
That's the French diplomat.
Yeah, then you got Jay's Treaty, Pinckney's Treaty, XYZ affair.
You should try to get on the writing the AP test because it looks like you have a lot of fun thinking of these questions.
I think one of the, when you turn to Jefferson's time period, there's the, he tries to stay out of the war through the Embargo Act.
But then you have a switching of party. Oh, no, that's like.
There's the other good essay. Show how Jeffersonians ended up being Federalists.
Yeah.
That's the era of good feelings, nationalization thing.
Good.
We pretty much. You think we burned out our enthusiasm?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. But we've got a lot of it done, and so when we. I'm not so sure I can meet Monday's my problem.
This is what you should do for the next year. Take some of your history money budget and set it aside for pizza. Money, you will have people here all night, I guarantee.
I stayed here a long time without pizza.
Well, I have to die from
the I ate right before I came here. And I don't know if you noticed, but I was a half an hour late.
No.
I haven't eaten since breakfast. I don't think about it.
I woke up.
Is that a Panera?